Here we go again.
It's time to talk.
I thought it was April Fool's Day when I heard that one. Get me off the air before I have a heart attack. We will have nothing to see for it. There's been many false dawns.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
The kindness of Cork people will never let you down.
Conversation that matters.
And be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. It's a Monday, so we have Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Cork, out in Ballincollig, making wonderful chocolatey, cakey, biscuity treats for a long, long time. And you can check out what they do at lusocork.ie. So more details on exactly what we're giving away for the Monday Munchies today. Can I mention cakes? I'll tell you exactly what they are a little later on, but it's your opportunity to win for you and those that you're working alongside. So text who you are and where you are to 086-8104-106, and the Red Patrollers will be delivering later on today. Well, story-wise, with regards to newspapers this morning, we have, sadly and unfortunately, more deaths on our roads. Both the Echo this morning on its front page and the inside pages with Ralph Regal in the Independent. He says road deaths soar by 45%. Three more killed in 12 hours of tragedy. He says in this morning's Independent, Donal O'Keefe in the Echo talks of an incident on Leaside where a pedestrian was killed in a road traffic collision in East Cork in the early hours of yesterday morning. It was a man in his 40s, around about 1:30 in the morning, down around Waterrock in Middleton, and the man sadly was pronounced dead at the scene. So that's a front pager making this morning's Echo. And then tragedy was averted because of a puffer jacket. Puff the Magic Jacket, as in the old song Puff the Magic Dragon. Front page of this morning's Mirror. Storm Kathleen was with us, of course, for part of the weekend, and there was a girl washed into the sea by stormy conditions when she was walking along a pier on, I think it was the Dunleary Pier, if I remember correctly, in South Dublin on Saturday. The RNLI came to her aid, and lots more emergency services, but it was her puffer jacket that kept her afloat because the air got trapped in the coat. Plucked from the jaws of death is the front page of making the Sun, and then the inside page of the Sun, they go into a bit more detail where they say the pockets of air trapped under the six-year-old's puffer jacket helped to keep her afloat, and she was pulled to safety from the frigid seas. A lifeboat volunteer has revealed the RNLI were involved, the Coast Guard, the Dublin Fire Brigade, ambulance services, Gardaí, all mounted an emergency rescue after she was swept off the pier in Dunleary Harbour during Storm Kathleen, as Kathleen battered the country on about 8:20 on Saturday night. So literally, saved from the jaws of death, from the jaws of drowning. There are many stories related to young people in the papers today. The front page in the Examiner talks about the scourge of social media. My words, not there. They call it the health risk to young people, particularly with regards to the amount now that have their own accounts and access to the likes of TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, and just general Google searches, I suppose, if you like. And what they're saying, according to those experts behind the psychiatric and online charity sector, saying that what we're seeing now is an increased number of self-harm patients, much younger people attending, and it's an absolute crisis point now. The Examiner this morning is really highlighting and shining a light that needs to be shone on the dark side of social media. And I suppose more time on screens cannot be a good thing. More time outdoors playing and getting a bit of, I was going to say sunshine, but we got it yesterday. It was a glorious day. I hope all the kids got out for yesterday. But 1 in 3 children spend less than an hour a day outside in the summertime. Yeah, I know I'd be looking at, and sometimes it can be very annoying to people say, oh my God almighty, looking at everything through rose-tinted glasses. But there was a time many years ago in the summer holidays, because they're quite young, they're very long, summer holidays, so you have to fill them, and there wasn't a whole lot of money around, so we weren't able to have the benefit of lots of money to go different places with our parents. So you went out in the morning, came home and you were hungry, and literally just packed it all in when it started to get dark. Now, it was a much safer world in many regards, but 1 in 3 children spending less than an hour a day outside in the summer, that's kind of scary. More to the point now is that young people are spending more time on games, consoles, chatting with friends online, and the vast majority of parents want their kids to get more damn fresh air and more exercise than anything else. There was an interesting article in I think it was the Financial Times of the weekend, where they were talking about the generations that are coming into the workplace now. And again, COVID features a lot in this, where they had 2 years where they really didn't have face-to-face conversations at a very important time of their life, developing social skills and what have you. And what they're saying is that you have people now, 18, 20, 22, 24, 25, 27, you know, that kind of age, coming into the workplace where they really and truly just can't cope. And the things they can cope with are, you know, the kind of skills that they need to interact with people in the workplace, particularly if they're involved in sales or anything to do with having to engage with customers or, you know, people that you're servicing as clients. They're slow to want to pick up the phone. They're slow to want to have conversations. And more to the point, they want to just do everything by email or by text. It's kind of worrying when you hear of it like that. And then, unfortunately, all too often, we hear of all of the different temptations that are out there that can end your life early. And, of course, a lot of that would have to do with drug abuse and various forms of addiction. And Katrina Toomey makes the front of the Echo this morning. She, of course, heads up Cork Penny Dinners. She said there's been a spate of overdoses recently on Leaside. The Echo put the figure as 20 drug deaths in the city related to nitazene. And nitazene, of course, is a very, very, very powerful poison. And it's a batch of this nitazene that people don't realize is as strong as it is. It's like, you know, numerous times, many, many times stronger than, say, for instance, heroin. And she says in the Echo this morning, we've lost as many 20 people that we know of to overdoses in the past few months. And then on a political scene, well, of course, everybody is probably okay now at this stage with the fact that we're going to have a new Taoiseach, because we have a new leader of Fine Gael. But what's he going to do, Simon Harris? Well, he's telling different people, be ready for an election. I often wonder, you know, where they get these kind of stories, because it was only 24, maybe 48 hours ago, that the words that came from his mouth himself was that this government will run its course and we'll have a general election sometime early 2025. So you don't know what's happening there. But one thing for sure is that Helen McEntee's ministerial portfolio in the Department of Justice is certainly under threat. And Fine Gael itself, or those within Fine Gael in the higher ranks, feel that Helen McEntee should be left alone, that if she's moved from Justice, it will be seen as a cave-in to the far right, particularly the anti-immigration agenda, according to the front of this morning's Independent. And in other research, and there's lots of it, I should have probably mentioned this when I was talking about people who sadly go on to form addictions. Everything in moderation, as the fellow says. So the Sun this morning talks of research that's out that says people in a relationship in which both partners drink alcohol tend to live longer, tend to have less conflict, longer marriages and less arguments, as opposed to a teetotal couple, I suppose, or as opposed to a relationship where one drinks and the other doesn't. And even, I suppose, one that drinks in moderation and the other doesn't, you can make that work. But if one drinks to excess, of course, and the other doesn't, then you've got conflict. But I would have thought that if both drink, in moderation, it would be fine. But if both drink to excess, then that would lead to a lot of chaos and issues within a relationship and within a family unit. But your thoughts on that are welcome. Text 0868104106. And one band, although they don't play together and haven't done so for quite some time, they have shared stages, what have you, and openings. I mean, they were there for the anniversary of Mamma Mia. Of course, I'm talking about the ABBA. And of course, they got together to acknowledge ABBA Voyage, which is the Avatar show that's absolutely flying. But it's the 50th anniversary of the ABBA's 1974 Eurovision win with Waterloo. And Bjorn, actually, on Saturday, was at the 25th anniversary of the West End smash hit Mamma Mia. And he said, you know, if it hadn't happened 50 years ago with Waterloo, none of this would be happening now, as in ABBA Voyage, the 25th anniversary of Mamma Mia. And I mentioned, actually, earlier on with regards to everything in moderation, two interesting stories involving the same man. Laverne Bicer made all the English papers yesterday and Saturday as well, because he is the world's oldest man at the age of 105. He has seen 13 solar eclipses, he says. I wonder how rare they actually are. I'll talk some more about the solar eclipse that we're expecting today. But anyway, one of the stories involving him at the weekend had to do with the fact that he says, asked him, they always ask people who are getting on in age, particularly the oldest person in the world, what's the secret to your longevity? And he said, everything in moderation, but fish and chips for sure every Friday. And he said, all his life, he would have fish and chips on a Friday. And now in his care home, he looks forward to Fridays more than any other day of the week because they bring in the fish and chips from the chippy. And actually, I was down in Kinsale yesterday with the weather being so glorious and the sun shining, and it was buzzing down there. It was really great. And you know, we often forget what a diamond Kinsale is, particularly for those of us in the city. It's literally 25 minutes away. You know, you're there before you realize it. And yet you're in this gorgeous town, the most beautiful views, the most fabulous scenery, as they say, and the greatest food. I mentioned fish and chips because I'd always been wanting to go in and sit down inside in Dino's and have the Dino special, which is the most massive piece of cod, hand-cut chips, mushy peas, tartar sauce. Oh my God, it was just glorious, and they were doing really well because it was very busy there. So fish and chips on a Friday, I'd have fish and chips every day if I could. And then there's that article with regards to Generation Z or Z, who don't care about table manners, you know, have no issue with whether or not their elbows on. Remember the days years ago your mammy would give out to you if your elbows were up? I don't know why. I have no idea as to why that was deemed to be rude or bad manners. Is it that your elbows are the dirtiest part of the body? I haven't a clue. I mean, the dirtiest thing on the table now, actually, is your mobile phone. It's 10 times dirtier than a toilet seat. I mean, you wouldn't put 10 toilet seats up on the dining room table or the kitchen table eating your dinner or inside in a restaurant, would you? But yet we have our mobile phones up there, never mind the fact that people are using them. But more than half of the survey talked about, you know, the things that they liked or disliked about other people when they're out to dinner. People talking with food in their mouth, people who were talking too loudly, people who snapped their fingers at the servers. I mentioned earlier on with Kelly, snaffling a chip would be one that I added to the list. Eating before everyone else gets served is another one, I think, isn't it true? The phone on the table, the elbows on the table, or indeed, I suppose, you could look at table manners at home. It's very hard for a young person who's sitting at dinner and they're maybe 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 years old, and they eat much faster than everybody else, to be made and forced to sit at the table while their mammy and daddy continue to eat. That must be so, so frustrating. But all you got to do, as opposed to running away from the table, is ask, can I be excused? Does anybody say that anymore? Text 0868104106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Bad news, lads. I'm getting reports this morning of a very bad pileup this morning. Reports of a four-car pileup in the overtaking lane. This is going westbound on the South Ring. It's between the Kinsale Road roundabout. It's on the before the Kinsale Road roundabout, so that would be around the between Douglas Court and Tesco, that little stretch there after the Bloomfield. Bad backups all the way back to the tunnel. Traffic's at a standstill and has been for 20, 30 minutes. So be aware of that. It's a bad one, apparently. A four-car pileup in the overtaking lane heading west on the South Ring. Traffic condition, road conditions this morning and weather conditions are not great. Earlier on, much earlier this morning, when I was coming and I was heading west earlier this morning, there's a surface water on the South Ring in places. I don't think that this morning, really, to be honest with you, was a 100 kilometres an hour trip. And on that basis, I backed down to in and around 85 to 90 kilometres max heading west this morning in the inside lane, the slower lane. And then all of a sudden, up behind me, this massive Arctic with a big white cab on it. It passed me eventually with a big shipping container up in the back end of that, right up behind me, about 10 feet behind me, flashing like crazy. It was in the wrong lane anyway, ultimately. I'll tell you more about that in a second. But you get an awful fright when you see this massive Arctic just bearing down on you, like 10 feet behind, flashing. What he was trying to encourage me to do was to move out into the fast lane, is it? Or get out into the slip lane to get off at Bishopstown or Wilton or something. It was idiotic driving. I'm assuming these people are highly trained to drive the big articulated trucks that they do. I mean, ultimately, all he did in the end was get into the slip lane, drove along the slip lane, and then headed west off to West Cork. I mean, it was just absolutely stupid. Notwithstanding the fact that in an Arctic, I think surface water isn't going to bother him too much, but for other cars, it can lead to you literally slipping and skidding on the road. We all have our stories, don't we, of crazy drivers, but slow down, guys, because it ain't safe with the amount of surface water out there. And, you know, it's just, I don't know what happened this morning, but there's a four-car pileup. I hope that there's nobody seriously injured. Text 0868104106. I will be coming back to this because last week we touched on all sorts of drivers and driving habits, and I didn't really get to read out as many of the texts as I wanted to do, so I will return to that. But a story that broke at the weekend had to do with the Charleville Park Hotel. There was all sorts of posts online, and I have screenshots of loads of them here this morning, saying that the Charleville Park Hotel was going to close to the public. A typical one here. Pat McDonough, the owner of Supermax, has bought the Charleville Park Hotel and is letting it out to international protection applications. The staff have been let go. This was the only hotel in the area. We need to send a very clear message with this. Boycott Supermax. Another one then said that the staff at the Charleville Park Hotel have been let go. It's all about calculating their massive profits by taking in international protection order applications. And then another one, rumours that the Charleville Park Hotel is closing down in order to take in more of these imports. Imagine calling a human being an import, like a product. Staff have been given their notice and the hotel are trying to keep it quiet in order to get the imports in unnoticed. The imports in unnoticed. That is so cruel, isn't it? It is just so cruel. Anyway, Pat McDonough had to come out front and centre over the weekend and say that this is total and utter rubbish. She joins me by phone, Managing Director and Founder of Supermax. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
You felt you had to come out and just knock this one on the head. How did it start?
Well, it started by a post on Twitter, I think, and a malicious post that, you know, that you've just read out there, and said that I had told the staff they were being let go, etc. And that sort of initiated it. And, you know, a lot of these Twitter posts are anonymous, so that you don't actually know where they came from or who's behind it or whatever. But I think it was done with malicious intent at any rate. And accordingly, we reported to the Gardaí. We tried to get it down ourselves, and then we reported to the Gardaí, and it came down pretty fast when that word got out that the Gardaí were investigating it. Yeah, but it shouldn't be allowed, as I say, Twitter or whoever, Facebook or whoever these organisations are, shouldn't be allowed to put up posts like that, that are intentionally done to damage a business or to whatever reason or purpose that they set out to do. And unfortunately, a lot of people kind of look at them and take them at face value, and consequently, then it does obviously damage the business if it's not stopped pretty rapidly.
Okay. Did you then have to get in touch with all your staff?
Yeah, well, the measure, obviously, the staff pretty much knew it, because they knew that there hadn't been, there wasn't any announcement out being told that they were going to be let go or anything like that. So they were pretty much aware of the situation. And well, obviously, the manager reinforced that as well, because I was actually over in the UK. But at any rate, yeah, they were quite well aware that it was malicious. But at the same time, it creates a little bit of uncertainty, etc., you know. But anyway, never was there any intention, and will not, the hotel will not be used for asylum seekers or anyone else for that matter. There are some units being built behind the hotel. I think they're being built by Cork County Council for refugees, etc. But hopefully they're mostly Ukrainian, as I say, refugees as well.
You know? Oh, well, that could be where it all started then, that before you know it, this then turns into people just hearing the words Charleville Park Hotel, and off they go then. Are you saying that as soon as you clarified it, all of these people who posted these kind of things took the post down, is it?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, because sorry, go ahead.
They're anonymous, so they don't want to be, they don't want to be recognised, they don't want to be kind of seen to do it. So, as I say, I'm not quite sure. We have a good idea who they are, and we've obviously reported that, but the Guardian investigated in due course.
Yeah, good luck trying to track them down. I mean, they hide behind all of these different accounts. I don't know whether or not the Gardaí could actually get to them. I mean, it's an interesting world online, because if I were to go on air and to say that reports are coming in that the supermarket's chief, the Supermax chief, has said that the Charleville Park Hotel will close to hotel guests and will take asylum seekers and refugees, you would sue me for defamation.
Absolutely, you see, whereas the online people can get away with some of this, and they resisted taking it down for when we asked them to take it down. But as soon as the Gardaí were brought into the investigation, they fairly quickly removed it.
Mm. Okay. Can I ask you, because I talk with a lot of hoteliers and those involved in hospitality who, I don't know if it's still happening, but spent, made the period of time over the last 2 years fending calls from different government departments, asking them to give over their businesses. Were you ever approached by anyone to flip to...
No, I can't say that we were directly, as far as I'm aware. Maybe the manager was anyway, but we had made the decision come back a few years ago that we were going to stick to the hospitality side of the business and continue with that. And, you know, as I say, some hotels did change over and produce them. As I say, they looked upon it as a way they could develop their business or whatever. But we made that decision quite some time ago. And when they were stuck initially, in the collection, we had 10 rooms available. But that was only for a temporary period until they got alternative accommodation.
Yeah, I mean, the last figures I could come up with are like nearly 2 years old now. But even then, one third of hotel beds had been given over to asylum seekers and refugees. I'm sure that figure must be substantially higher now. Do you think that a lot of hoteliers and those involved in that type of hospitality flipped over because the winters would be quiet and it was easier money?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, I know a few hoteliers who did convert to that side of the business, and they have done quite well out of it. And everyone has a reason, had their own decision to make, and the reason for doing it. But it is in touristy areas where winters are quite. It is attractive to utilise the hotel for asylum seekers or whatever. Mm. And look, as I say, there are some who have done exceptionally well out of it. I think the good days are over in it, but that's for another day to discuss, yeah.
You don't think that this malicious carry-on at the weekend will damage the hotel, or more so this boycott Supermax campaign?
No, I think we nipped it in the bud in time, but if it was allowed to escalate, and it was interesting that really it was Saturday that this thing emanated and started, that at a time, you know, when it's hard to access and a lot of staff, or some staff might be off or people might be off for the weekend. So they really kind of timed it to do the most damage.
Okay.
But no, it won't, because I think, in fairness to our own staff, they did a very good job in installing it and getting the message out that no, we're not changing business direction whatsoever.
Okay, just with regards to nipping something in the bud or stalling something, you don't mind if I just mention your April Fool's Day joke there recently that raised the ire of the GAA, who couldn't see the funny side of it?
Not at all, no. I mean, it was a joke, and I think most 90% of people would have taken it as such. And
for those that don't know, Supermax said that they were taking over the rights to Croke Park, and it would from now on be known as Supermax Croke Park.
Yeah, well, you see, after the controversy with Porky Quees, I mean, it was opportune and turned the juice to the marketing guys that came up with the idea. They just thought it was a play on that, and put it up on April Fool's Day that we were taking over the naming rights of Croke Park, Supermax Croke Park. And, I mean, so outlandish, that's what makes it funny. But obviously, Croke Park didn't see the funny side of it. And
what did they do? What did Croke Park do when they saw it?
Well, they got on to Meta and Facebook and all that to take it down, and they closed our account there, and I got on to their solicitors to send the solicitor's letter to us.
Did you think that was another April Fool's joke?
No, because I sent one before, so, but anyway, not to worry. It was just one of those storms in a teacup that had it, you know. And in actual fact, the reality of it was it really escalated the advertising of it or whatever, because people then kind of thought, you know, can Crow Park not take a joke? And accordingly, kind of it mushroomed way beyond what we ever thought it would, you know.
Bit of guerrilla marketing there for you.
We've often done April Fool jokes before, insofar as, you know, we did it with Aer Lingus, insofar as we announced sometime that we were going to serve snack boxes on Aer Lingus flights and such. And likewise, Copperface Jacks, we were going to open in Copperface Jacks in Dublin, and, you know, and a few other things along the way. But they all were taken in good stride, and everyone kind of enjoyed them for what it was. But look, it's over, it's done, as I say, we move on, you know, we'll continue to sponsor it all the time.
You're a big supporter, GA. You've invested over 15 million in the Gaa at all levels over the years, haven't you?
At least. Well, we would be, yeah. We'd be more so, I suppose, a supporter of grassroots and that type of thing, and county teams here and there, and we support college teams and local teams, etc. Some cases we'd be main sponsor, other cases we'd be an ancillary sponsor. So, but it's a great game, and it's a great I enjoy it very much, and you know, it creates great atmosphere. Like, it was over in London at the weekend at Galway versus London. Now, the game itself wasn't that great, but the atmosphere was absolutely excellent, because for the joining together of people kind of from the West mostly, and people who had been in London for the last, sometimes for the maybe last 40 or 50 years. So it was a great gathering, and very enjoyable social occasion as well.
Okay, so
that's what the GA should be about. Yeah.
I mean, Páirc Uí Chaoimh has flipped to Super Value Páirc Uí Chaoimh. If the GA are up for it and you had half a million to spare, would you go for Supermax Croke Park?
I doubt it might be entertained at this stage.
All right, okay. Thanks, Pat. Have a good day. Appreciate it.
As always.
Take care. Bye-bye. Pat McDonough, the managing director and founder of Supermax and the owner of the Charleville Park Hotel. Just quickly on this one, actually, Ian Doyle is one of the local Fianna Fáil councillors up in the Mallow Kenturk. I suppose it also covers quite an amount of that hinterland that includes the Charleville area. Anyway, morning, Ian.
Morning, Neil. You might be just after getting the ball rolling for Croke Park there, I'd say.
I don't know. I mean, what did Super Value pay? Significantly under 300 grand or something, was it? But I don't know. What would you pay on Croke Park? Probably a million. Supermax Park Agree. But anyway, your hotel's safe. Yep. Was there a bit of a kerfuffle at the weekend up in North Cork?
There was, Neil, and it's a pity, but like, it has been mumbling for the last fortnight, really, and it came to a head on Saturday night with that post. We established with the owners, and it's great to hear Pat talking about it there this morning now, and also with the manager over the week, that there's absolutely no truth in the rumours of the hotel closing down. I mean, and I suppose, as you say, it came to a head over the weekend with that course, and that's just what prompted me to make sure that it's not true, you know.
Because you have
the cornerstone of our business.
The one hotel, is it?
We've only the one hotel, and it's only the one hotel in North Cork, really, to be honest with you, Neil, in this area, you know. And it services, you know, we were just after midterm break there, or Easter break, and you know, the last fortnight has been packed to capacity all week, with children and people coming into the hotel and staying from all parts of the country. Mm, you know, it's important that it stays going.
Yeah.
Fighting for the economy.
It would be big for weddings and 21sts and family occasions.
Yeah, and it's a venue that can hold 1,000 people, you know, that big hall can hold 1,000 people. So, you know, there's very few facilities around this area that can do that. So, you know, it's vital for the whole economy of the town.
And you've got a Supermax there as well, don't you? Because that was the talk.
We've got a Supermax in the main street, yeah.
Exactly,
which was crazy altogether. I mean, our main street is the heart of our town, and people saying to boycott industry and retail units. It was crazy. But look, I'm delighted that it's knocked on the head, and I'm delighted it's confirmed that the hotel and Supermax are staying in charge. Look, it is brilliant. Yeah.
How's business and how's life generally up there? I saw this weekend your reporter saying you got two business parks that are packed to capacity, top class jobs opportunity. But you must. I knew you had to be. I knew you had to be a government. I knew you had to be part of the government parties because you said house building is at an all time high in the town. Are you joking me or what?
Well, no, I'm not, Neil. To be honest with you, we have five housing developments going on in Charleville as we speak. Two of them are completed, and there's three in construction. And, you know, that's a fact. That's a fact in Charleville. Maybe that news doesn't go out too often. But, you know, there's, again, the hotel, and awful lot of the employees that are they're working in the building sites are actually staying in the hotel.
Okay. Good stuff.
So, yeah. No, you know, I mean, like you did, but there's more needed, no question about it. But, you know, no, Charleville is a quietly busy town, and long may it continue.
Long may it continue. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, much obliged to Ian Doyle, councillor for the Mallock and Turk North Cork area. Actually, it just goes to show how quickly things can take off. You know, social media, you got people posting and then sharing, and then other people get involved in it. Before you know it, it's completely out of control. But the whole thing was just a pile of nothing. But, you know, if you look at the stats there, and it's hard to get totally up-to-date figures, but they're saying that there was 1.49, nearly 1.5 billion was spent last year on accommodation for those fleeing war in the Ukraine. That's 1.5 billion on Ukrainian war refugees. Add to that a further 640 million on accommodation for international protection applicants. So last year alone, we spent nearly 2.2 billion on accommodation. So you can understand that a lot of that would be, of course, the likes of hotels and guest houses, and to some extent modular homes, which really didn't take off as much as we would have thought. But that's a lot of money, isn't it? You know, there are over 28,000 international protection applicants living in the state and have to be, and they're in state-provided accommodation, your hotels and your guest houses and your summer homes and the parks that were set up for tourist rentals. So that's 28,000. And then on top of that, nearly 75,000 Ukrainians. And there can be a lot of money made in it. The Red Cam Warren Hotel receives, or at least last year, got 26.5 million. The Travelodge got over 25 million. Mosny got 25 million. The Holiday Inn at Dublin Airport got 23 million. The Security Management Services Company, AllPro, got 19.6 million in government payouts last year. Mill Street Equestrian Services got 16.8 million. The figures go on and on. Then if you look at some of the more local ones, the figure for 2022, so the last one I have for the Quality Hotel in Youghal, 12.5 million. Just looking at Trebolgan, which was a figure again for 2022, was 5 million. I could go on and on, but you can see how the numbers add up to vast amounts when you add it all up together. Over 1.5 billion on fleeing war in Ukraine, and 640 million for international protection orders. If those figures are any updated anytime soon, I'll bring them to air. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Certainly do. Text 0868 104 106. Another story that I said I'd keep an eye on was the story of the pensioner Sean Meehan up in Kerr, County Tipperary, accused of failing to comply with an enforcement notice issued by Tipperary County Council back in December of 2022. He put up and built himself a log cabin. He tried and tried and tried, to recently divorced and in very bad health, and was trying very hard to find accommodation and somewhere to live, but couldn't, so bought the land, put up his own cabin, and Tipperary County Council brought a case against him. And I said that I'd check in after the more recent court appearance, which was last week. And Sean Meehan joins me by WhatsApp. Sean, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Nice chatting with you again. So it's been put back again until June 6th for mention again at Cashel District Court. Why? Were you given an instruction to do something between now and June 6th, I wonder, Sean?
No, I think what happened, it took everybody by complete surprise. I think with the media attention and everything that's going on with this case, I thought they just took an opt-out policy, to be quite honest about it. They say that I can apply for retention again. But if I apply for retention again, the same as I have, the same scenario will come up again. So that's my way of thinking it.
Okay. So what do you, okay, so you did apply after it was put up and built and everything, moved in, you applied like many other people do that. They build something.
Yeah, yeah.
Heard a big story of it over the weekend, and then they apply for retention and they're allowed to leave it there. Well, you refused it.
I was refused it, as I say in the interview I'd done with you. I'd done 5 years to see, give me breathing space. Then I got quite ill, so that took it all out of the equation. Then I replied for full planning to keep it here. I was refused on that. So then they put me through the courts and back now again, and they say the 6th of June. So my thinking is, like, are they kicking the can down the road here to try and wait till the media attention and everything fades down?
Okay.
And then I go through the whole scenario, which I don't think I could take, you know.
Okay, again. I know, it's just that I had heard third hand that you had until June 6th before the next court appearance to have it dismantled, demolished and put back as a green field. That isn't the case then, no?
No, it isn't the case, okay. Neil. No, they say that I reapply again for planning on it. So I spoke to my architect the other day, and he said, Sean, if we put back in again, like, why did they refuse it twice now? So if we go again third time lucky, what's stopping them from doing the same? So I think he has a meeting with the planners this morning, my architect, to see, can we tweak this some way, or what do Tipperary County Council need to get this over the line?
Apparently, well, could it be a case that exactly what you're saying is correct, that they're saying apply for retention again, and between you and me they would then grant it, and this story then would go away because it has gathered so much interest from people right across the country that they can't deal with the heat, perhaps?
I think that may be it, because the scenario changed so dramatically from being steadfast that I'm going to jail. So I walked in, there were reporters there, and it was over in 2 seconds.
And what happened? But what actually happened on Thursday in those few seconds?
The judge actually came out and said, I want this put back to the 6th of June. And he said, Sean could apply for retention. End of case. Next case, please. Everybody sat there. The reporters, I don't think, got the tops off their pens. They all looked at each other and said, what happened here? I think something had been sorted out long before he ever got to the courthouse.
If that's the case, I'd be trying to look at this as a glass half full as opposed to a glass half empty.
Well, that would be my way of thinking, Neil, yes.
So would you be a lot more optimistic now than before last week?
I don't think optimism would come into it. I think the media attention, as you say, like so many other cases happen like this down along the line, which I followed. And the one in Carrigan, sure, they ran him down up to €12,000 in legal fees. So he just pulled out.
What was he doing? Was that a log cabin as well?
It was a log cabin on his mom's land.
And did he lose that?
He absolutely, yes.
What happened to the log grand cabin?
Dismantled it and it was sold off.
On his own family land?
Yes, in Carrigan, sure. I followed that case with interest because I was in the same situation going through the courts.
€12,000 so in legal fees, lost it, demolish it, and live where? You don't know?
I think he's gone back and living with his mum. He wanted some independence and a little place of his own on his own land, the same entrance they'd used for 40 years going into their own dwelling house. And they said the entrance would disrupt traffic and stuff going in. Like, he used the same entrance. They've all used the same entrance.
So the same gates as the family home.
Yeah, there's something certainly adrift. I think it comes down to, like, I think with planning and stuff, you're probably 30,000 for planning and stuff would be brought out. Then you'd have the builders involved. I think if they go down the road with these modular homes, I don't think financially it's a great alternative for them.
No, it's fine for them, though, because they don't need any planning to build the modular homes, the government or the government department.
This would really chase me off from day one. There's talks about some more now in Ballingran and Clonmel getting a go-ahead like that. I think 94 of them or something. But they are exempt from planning.
They are, yeah.
So my attitude here was there can't be one law for them and one law for John Meehan.
Okay, are you nervous when you go into court? It's not a place that anybody really...
Absolutely. The times I'd been there, like to walk in there, and it's a daunting task, believe you me, I'm pretty strong-willed and all, but to walk in there, and it's not easy, I can give you that much. I prefer to be sitting here chatting to you, having a cup of tea.
Fair play, but did you think Thursday that there was a slim chance you'd be off to jail?
I took it at the judge's ruling on the last day, and he was quite adamant about it, that I was going to jail. So I actually had my bag packed. I had my mindsets on it that I was going to jail.
What's
that
you
was
in the bag? A pair of shoes, bit of clothes, tooth. What was in that bag?
I had my underwear, a few socks, shoes, T-shirts, whatever I thought I'd need, because I've never packed one of those bags before. So I wasn't too sure the outcome. I'd never been in one of those establishments. So I didn't know what the bed and breakfast was like or what the facilities. But look, I said my family would look after me, bring me in more stuff as I would need it.
My God, so you were pretty much resolved on Thursday morning that you might go to jail, and you packed a bag accordingly. Was there a big media interest? You know, from
there
around
was,
the country.
There was, there, absolutely, yeah, because I think I'm setting a precedent here that for all the amount of people that's on our website, we have a WhatsApp website for people that find themselves in the same situation. It's absolutely unreal. Thousands of people hiding, sneaking in different entrances, won't have an entrance into the places because they're afraid some neighbor or somebody will grass them up and they'll be in the same situation as me.
Yeah, but are they log cabins now, or caravans or mobile homes or what have you? Yours is particularly
I'd say a kind of a selection of mobile homes, log cabins and whatever. I had done this, as I said to you, because in the summertime it was lovely.
Yeah.
But when the winter time came, these are not designed to live in the winter. So we done it, and we done it well, because we know what we're doing. So we done it, and I said, gee, this is great. Like, I was amazed by it. It's lovely and warm. And in the summertime, it's actually quite cool in here.
But I know, but listen, if you look at the world, we're in 2024 now. Who of us can judge anybody who hasn't anywhere to live or can't afford rent or can't get a mortgage? Who are we to judge anybody that puts a mobile home or indeed a caravan, it mightn't be aesthetically beautiful or pretty, on their own family land for a son or daughter to live in or to get a start in life? We can't judge them.
We can't, and we shouldn't. We shouldn't. There's complete discrimination. Like, I spoke to a lady with four grandkids and stuff in there, and they have an enforcement notice against them. I spoke to a nurse in Dublin that she actually couldn't get accommodation in Dublin. A one-bedroom apartment was €2,800. So she was staying on couches with her friends. Then another nurse said that she had a little piece of ground at her house, so they put in a little log cabin in there, which was ideal. Now take it, this lady is a nurse helping other people. 1 month, bang, bang, on the door, council officials to say it was an unauthorized development.
Yeah, yeah.
Well.
How would they find that out? Do you think it would be a neighbor would grass them up?
It was reported to the council, whatever, Fingal or wherever it was in Dublin, that this unauthorized development was there. Now, taking in mind this lady is a nurse, the job she does, caring for other people. No wonder our people are emigrating to other countries. We educate the system here, as I said to you, is brilliant. But how was she supposed to pay $2,800 a month for a one-bedroom apartment in Dublin?
That's not possible. Well, that's interesting, because if your situation, you're attracting other stories and you're engaging with other like-minded people who are in the similar situation to you. I hope you're in a position to hold on. I'd love to just finish the conversation with you just after 10. We're in conversation with Sean Meehan. Back after 10.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
And get your text in for Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso in Ballincollig, for everyone who loves chocolate and cake. And today, Luso are giving away two large cakes, luxurious carrot and walnut celebration cakes, lightly spiced with vanilla and cinnamon, and fresh mascarpone cream cheese frosting. Sounds delicious, doesn't it? Be lovely with a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or whatever you're having yourself. So you will win that if you text who you are and where you are to 086 8104 106, and we'll start the shout outs in about a half an hour's time. So Monday Munchies with Luso in Ballincollig. Get texting and we'll see how we go. A lot of texts already this morning on different topics of conversation. A lot of people supporting Sean Meehan. I'll chat with him again in a few minutes' time. Tell Sean keep fighting the fight. Keep fighting the planning. He's on the right side. What harm is his wee house causing? None. So keep on fighting, says Desi. Oh, the irony of the numbers you gave out this morning. €2 billion on refugees, and there's Sean in the position he's in. Why can't they find a house for the man? It's crazy, says Maria in Golden, County Tipperary. It's fair to say now that the housing crisis we have is a national emergency. We have some of the best doctors, nurses, teachers and Gardaí. Yes, most go through college, but they end up emigrating. Why? Because of the cost and the non-availability of affordable housing. I often wonder, says this texter, if builders can build houses for 200 grand, why are they being sold for 400 grand? It seems like builders and developers and banks are milking the system. It's very interesting because one of the conversations I had with Sean was a nurse who could not afford, I don't know, was it, he say, 2,500 a month to try and rent a house or a property or an apartment in Dublin. So instead, probably does a long commute and put a mobile home on her family's plot of land. Just to finish the conversation with Sean, he joins me again by WhatsApp. So Sean, good morning again.
Well, good morning.
I won't keep you much longer. So were there many supporters rallying outside court on Thursday?
I think there was total of, somebody put an estimate at about 70 people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I spoke to a guy from Cohen Cork, Michael. He's been in this scenario for almost 12 years now, and finding it very tough going. He thought, as I thought, somebody had said one time, if you had 7 years, they couldn't actually prosecute you. He's been 12 years in the same situation, can't get legal aid either. So he's paying out his own money, him and his dad. And I think they're through the courts on the 20th of this month with an order the same as me.
Kind of a difficult thing to be living with the clock ticking down to June 6th to find out the next stage of your life, you know?
It's pretty tough going, Neil. I'm a tough enough person myself, but at this stage, if I have to keep going on through this scenario, I'm finding it tougher and tougher all the time. I'm afraid of the 6th of June, the same thing starts all over again, and I'm in the same situation again.
Is it impacting on your health, I wonder?
It is. It's tough going. As I say, all along, I can't even leave the house. I just go to the local shop or whatever. I'm afraid that I come back, whatever few possessions I have will be thrown out and they'll start to dismantle my home.
Would there be a chance that they might demolish or dismantle it because you won't, but that they won't send you to jail? Or will one happen in tandem with the other, do you think?
I think one will happen in tandem with the other. That was the scenario I was dreading on Thursday last.
Yeah.
I'm on my very way to Limerick Jail, and then I'm out of the equation now. They can come on here and just take this down. Like, whatever few things I thought about it, I said, my daughter said, like, Sean, Dad, put all this stuff in with me. Jesus, Green, I said, this is no way to live. Whatever few my own personal bits, I said to move everything because they want to take my home down. I can't get my head around it.
Well, if you're in jail and they do go along to demolish it, then you can't fulfill your wish that you would lie down in front of the diggers to stop them because you'd be in Limerick or Cork or Portlaoise or wherever it might be.
Well, I spoke to a couple of ladies at the courthouse and they said to me, Sean, well, we'll take over from you. If you're actually in Limerick Jail, we'll go to your site and we will lay down there and we'll stop this because I have my own daughters and they will never own the home. They're thinking about emigrating, which is really upsetting for us. Like to see them go, we're gone back to the bad old days where we were emigrating. And new people coming in.
Yeah.
Like, are we educated? As I said, my own family alone, none of them will ever own a house in this country.
No one's got on to you from Tipperary County Council or anything offering you a home or anything like that. No, that's not a solution.
No, I had a meeting with the homeless division. And I said, with all due respect, you girls, I said, I'm not homeless.
Yeah, I know.
I have a home. I made for myself and I'm happy in my home. If I can be just left alone to live my rest of my life out, I'm making no difference to anybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most people can't even find where I live. I don't think the couple of TV crews that came here had to get a convoy, some neighbours take them down here to find me. That was the idea I had.
You're so isolated, with their background. Yeah, I know.
It suits me ideal.
And tell me is your solicitor now, or do you have somebody who is now going through the process of applying for a third time for retention? I mean, you're going to do that between now and June 6th, are you?
I am, yeah. I spoke to Brian McCarthy, my architect, and he said, Sean, we got to find out here. We've put this through twice now, and they've refused it, aesthetics and social and economic need. And he said, what's changed? Nothing has changed. I still am the same person. I still have the social and economic need, yeah. Aesthetic need.
Yeah.
So he said, why kick it down the can down the road? I think myself, personal view, is that hopefully the hype would go down, people would, you know, the momentum would kind of die out of the thing. If I said the other morning at the courthouse, without all those people being there and the media, yourselves included, if I hadn't had that, I would be, instead of sitting here talking to you now having a cup of tea, I'd be having my breakfast porridge for breakfast in Limerick Jail. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah, there is huge national interest, for sure there is. So we have two scenarios here. One is that you get retention on the third application and you're left alone. The other is that you don't, and you go back on June 6th and you go off to jail for a spell. In the meantime, the diggers come in and demolish your log cabin home. You come out of it. What do you do then? Because you, in your last conversation with me, said if that happened, you just pitch a tent on the site where the log cabin was.
That's exactly what I will do. I'll put a tent there and I live in the tent. Because I'm taking a stand on this, as I said to you before, not alone for me, but to speak to an old lady, and she upset with her granddaughter. They were trying to put a place for her, and somebody, for some reason known to themselves, reported her. They should be trying to help the girl, not do this. So therefore, if I can make a difference, I said, if I've done anything good in my life, if I can change it on this, for me and everybody else coming down the line, I've done a good thing. Mm. But if they think that they've threatened me with this and they knock down everything I have here, I still own the land. It's mine. So therefore, I would just pitch a tent there and I live in the tent.
Let's see what happens in the coming weeks, my friend. But do stay in touch and we'll chat again. You can be sure of that, Sean. All right.
Thank you, Acora. Good luck to you.
All the best for now. Sean Meehan in County Tipperary, up around Care, County Tipperary, as I say. We'll keep an eye on it. Text 0868 104 106 for your thoughts and opinions on that.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
A damp and wet morning could start the week for you well with Monday Munchies, courtesy of ourselves and Luso of Ballincollig. Let us start the shout-outs. Here's a quick bunch of them. We'd love the Munchies here at Suite 24 in the Cork Clinic, working very hard. We need some sweet treats to get us through the day. Morning, Lisa P, Sharon, Grace and Lisa M. Cork Plumbing at the Lock Business Park in Toker. We have 10 vans on the road with lads in them and they make short work of your cakes this morning. I'm sure you would. For my mum, dad, my mum Mary and my dad are at home in Turner's Cross. I really hope I win it for them. On this miserable day, the staff in Cove Hospital, morning to Lydia and all of the staff, Cork Flower Studios in Douglas Street, staff, especially the owners Justine and Evan, one in a million. They really keep the flowers blooming. Just one or two more for now. My workplace, St. Patrick's Boys National School in Mallow, amazing staff, hit hard over the Easter holidays by learning that one of the well-known students, sadly, was diagnosed with leukemia. That's awfully sad, even though they're already working on a plan to help the family out. It would be a lovely way to start the week in the workplace at St. Patrick's Boys National School in Mallow, and everybody finally at Nurture Childcare in Blackrock. So keep those texts coming. Text 086 8104 106. Tell us who you are and where you are. More shout outs and you might win the Monday Munchies with Luso a little later on. I was talking this morning about different topics, including accommodation for all, including those that are coming into the country, and how divisive that topic has become. Interesting texts here saying, I agree, all you need to do is look online and you'll come across many far-right groups. But here's my point. The Irish government has pushed so much of the EU agenda, whether it be agenda or not, and that's how it comes across to normal people, normal Irish thinking people, that it's EU agenda. I believe that if you're using the term far right, can you then please also use extreme left in the same negative way. The government was put back in its box at the last referendums. I don't say extreme left just for the sake of it, but just look at the referendums, the abortion referendum. We were told abortion would be very strict, and then look what happened. Can I just stop the text and say, please tell me, what do you believe happened after the abortion referendum? They want to bring in a law now, too, where you can take your own life. That's euthanasia. Again, it sounds okay if you're in constant pain and no chance of surviving, but I can guarantee you if this is made law, it will be abused. All I know is that we are living in a very dangerous country with the most liberal people on planet Earth now. Just call them what they are, please. Extreme left, if you use the term for the other side, far right. One thing you didn't mention there, of course, is another very contentious issue going on at the moment, and that is the hate speech law legislation, which I think also is very much being pushed as a European agenda. On Pat McDonough from Supermax, I hope the Charleville Park stays open as a hotel. It will. It's one of the few hotels left where Irish dancing competitions are held. It's a fantastic venue and a hotel that gets booked out many, many weekends. I think the GAA have some cheek biting the hand that feeds them, as I know it was just a joke with regards to Supermax Croke Park. Supermax have pumped money into the GAA. Great publicity, though, for Supermax, don't you think? Yes, I do think. One or two emails this side of some more calls. I was in town at the weekend. The organized begging needs to be stopped, full stop. All the tourists were giving this man food that they bought in the shops. Also, he had bags and bags of food behind him, and coins as well. There was an Irish female begging near a bin not too far from him, and he was ordering her to move because she was harming him from getting more. The man clearly said he had a place to bring the food back to, as in he had somewhere to live. Yeah, professional beggars. He's not homeless. Real homeless people are suffering from this, and it must be stopped. The organized begging must be stopped in the city. And then I know we spoke a lot then about issues involving driving and driving habits, and a bad pile-up this morning on the South Ring. And then last week's programme featured the tractor driver who got prosecuted and fined for not pulling in. Amazing response to that. And some of it is quite interesting. Nothing to do with anything to do, say, for instance, with the driving habits of tractor drivers. Here's an example of one. You might, because we were talking then about Massey Ferguson, New Holland, John Deere's. Somebody said you might find it interesting that there is generational loyalty to John Deere tractors. During the Great Depression, they never repossessed any equipment that people couldn't pay off. They let them pay when they could. And for that reason, a lot of people still feel very loyal to them. That's John Deere. I also mentioned the slogan with regards to the red Massey Ferguson's, if it's not red, leave it in the shed. Somebody else added to it saying, New Holland tractors, if it's not blue, she won't do. But then there were people talking about the driving habits. Leave the farmers alone and start fining the packs of cyclists who invade the country roads every Saturday and Sunday. They're travelling up to three abreast, they never pull in to leave a car pass, and they never stay together. So when you eventually pass out one group, you're sucked in behind another. Leave the farmers alone, they're the backbone of the country. Tractor drivers aren't half as much of a problem as those Lycra langers on their racing bikes in big groups. Full stop. That texter couldn't put it any plainer than that. Morning, I'm 36, originally from a small terraced house in the middle of Farranree, not a farm. And I never heard such ignorant comments regarding tractors on the road. Wake up, people. There's a whole world out there. I'll be ignorant back now and say no prizes for getting who takes oat and almond milk in their latte at Red FM. Well, I don't know who you're referring to there, but certainly not me. Although these days they open the fridge at home and there's never fresh milk in it. It's just gone. It's all oat milk this and almond milk that. And then we had Jamie on air on Friday, who lived for many years with a stammer and managed to overcome it. He had a great, powerful story to tell. Such kudos to that man for speaking on radio. Incredible. Yes, it is, of course, for somebody with the possibility of stammering to talk on live radio. It's a courageous thing to do. Fellow stammerer here, and I've been on the program mentioned before as the one that Jamie did to correct the stammer. Great to hear this discussed on air. Probably another few points to add, like don't finish off someone who stammers sentences. We will get there in the end. Don't break eye contact with a stammerer, as this can sometimes make a piece of person feel even worse. Thank you for that. Don't finish a conversation is an interesting point. I suppose we automatically would want to finish the person who stammers conversation because we feel we're helping them, but clearly we're hindering. What a great story from Jamie. I've made a conscious decision to refuse to listen any more of the negative stories that go on in the country and the world. It's not that I don't care or that I'm burying my head in the sand. I just find too much of the bad news over the last year has done nothing but bad news to my own mental well-being. It's just one bad news story following the next since the pandemic. That, I suppose, is why you found Jamie's story so uplifting. And just one or two more. What an incredible young man you have on the radio. Jamie is a great inspiration for people who have and live with a stammer. And Pat Phelan says, great stuff, Jamie, and gives him three thumbs up. I think I'm due to talk to Pat Phelan, not too distant future, on maybe it's tomorrow or Wednesday. On, remember, I got a letter in from a mother who's very worried about her son's drinking. I asked for advice from various people, amongst them Pat Phelan, so I will be coming back to that. Text 0868 104 106. Let me stay with the phone lines on this Monday morning, busy as usual. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Neil, and okay, listeners.
And thank you for taking the call. Is this roads related? Is this driving related? Four cars pile up now this morning at the South Ring. I hope everybody's okay. Driving conditions were far from ideal, but go ahead.
Now, basically, we should have a proper road safety authority, and there's issues coming up on your program and other programs.
We do have a road safety authority. This is about people's driving habits.
Yeah, but if people's driving habits would be tackled properly if we had a proper authority. Now, what I'm talking about is there's inconsistency in testing. There's a lot of issues within the road safety authority that people from the outside would not be aware of. I worked for 15 years in this. Now, I was one of the first to qualify in all categories in the country, and I believe that we needed to change.
Okay, qualify now. Forgive me now, Pat. What do you mean, all categories to qualify? And what?
Qualified teaching in all categories, trucks, buses, cars, the whole lot.
That would make you an advanced driving instructor.
Yeah. And one of the areas I worked in advanced driving, and it was very good, was I worked with the Institute of Advanced Motors, and they had a one-day course. Now, what we done is we covered a lot of the theory stuff in the morning, and then we covered on-road stuff in the afternoon. And there should be a lot more of this. So there's an awful lot of areas we can look at. And unfortunately, one of the areas within the RSA is total inconsistency in testing. Now, when I qualified there, I actually told some of the instructors that we need to go down this road. We need to go with the RSA. There's massive changes coming on board, and this business needs to change. But unfortunately, all I was promised was all put to one side. And now the Road Safety Authority, what I would describe them as, is an authority that are answerable to nobody.
I can't work through this with you, because this is about people's driving, right? It is not easy to pass the driving test. It is not easy to pass the theory test. You know, you have to do all of the lessons. You have to pass the theory test. The threshold is very high. You have to pass the driving test. You know, you can be failed very, very quickly, you know, and you have to sit it again. So why is it that if it's difficult to get a license, then we see, let's hone in on young drivers. Last week it was the story of the driver with the N plate up, driving like an absolute lunatic. The week before that, it was somebody driving down the wrong way on the motorway, an L driver. Or was it an L driver with an N plate? So they're doing all of the tests, and then when they get the license, then far too many of them are driving like lunatics. They wouldn't have driven like that doing the test. So why do they think it's okay now that they've been given a very coveted possession, a license?
they basically have this attitude that I know everything now. I'm after passing the test, and unfortunately, you've pointed a thing. There is a high rate of accidents after people pass a test because, first of all, some of it is down to the level of instruction, and there's major issues there. Okay, some instructors teach people to pass a test; they don't teach them to drive for life. Okay, so and some instructors are of the opinion, I've heard this, and it saddens me. Because life is as easy as you make it. You know, in other words, we just do enough with this fella or whatever, this girl, to pass their test. We won't show them how to drive safely for life. Once they pass the test, they're happy. I get a few bob. They're going around telling how wonderful I am. But they've not actually teach people to drive for life. So unfortunately, we have some of this.
But what teaching do they need to read a speed sign?
Teaching they need is there's an awful lot within instruction. And when I done my training, I taught and I gave about 60 hours with a guy there that teaches disabled people. And I went into every type of detail that you could, that whatever scenario that I would come up with on a day-to-day, I had an answer for that. I had diagrams. I must have had 20 different diagrams. And if one didn't work for you, one of the others would. So basically, I put heart and soul into this. But unfortunately, the RSA didn't appreciate that level of instruction. The level of instruction out there now, the RSA are not addressing. Now, again...
All right, but hang on a second. Do you accept that it's difficult to pass a driving test? It is difficult to pass a theory test?
It's difficult to pass a driving test if you have inconsistency with testers as well. We had a tester there for 5 years and two people in the whole week he'd pass. And he's still within the system and he's still not been dealt with. And when I talk to you of what I was promised at the start of this, I was promised at the start of this that if there was a tester there in our area and everyone was passing and then next week everyone was failing, that tester would be brought in and asked how come people are failing when they're all...
I accept that. There might be inconsistencies.
So there's an awful lot in that, and like what's come up as well is
but
people...
But you refuse to acknowledge or put any responsibility on the person behind the wheel of the car.
There is a responsibility on the person behind the wheel, but this is where the professionalism comes in with the instruction, with a road safety authority that's given a clear message that if you're instructed...
I don't see it, Pat. You're the professional. I just don't see it, and I hate to come across as if I'm interrupting you. People will feel as if I'm being abrupt.
Yeah,
I don't mean that.
Another problem was coming up there, that if people were failing belong to me there every week, I would be encouraged by the road safety authority to go off and get adequate training. In other words, people need to get proper instruction. So these were a lot of the things I was promised there at the start, that if instructors, and there is instructors out there and they do need training and they're not up to standard, but unfortunately we have a system that's accepting that. And unfortunately...
But you're not saying surely that some of those driving instructors passed people who were fit to be passed and then they went out in the roads and crashed. Killed themselves, killed others, maimed themselves for life.
There's driving instructors and they're supposed to get check tests every 2 years, and if they fail a check test, they don't get their license and they have to go off and get training. That's not happening either. There's an awful lot of stuff not happening within the system, and what I feel sorry for is the people that go to these driving instructors and, as I said, put their life in their hands of, you're going to show me how to drive for life and you're going to be interested in my safety. Unfortunately, that's not happening. And
Well, hang on a second. They know that they should use indicators, right? They know that they shouldn't text while they're driving. There's a campaign out at the moment saying, would it kill you to put your phone down? And it shows somebody literally what it must be like behind the wheel of a car when the car crashes. It's very impactful. Don't know if it's... I think it might be Sky are running it at the moment. Have you seen that campaign? Would it kill you to put your phone down? So you have people on the phones, you have people texting on the phones, you got people, doing their makeup in the phone, shaving in the phones, driving up too close behind somebody in front of them, driving around bends on the wrong side of the road, doing 120 and an 80. They're all common sense things that people should not be doing.
Now, unfortunately, again, there's an awful lot of issues there on our roads, the use of phones there, and this should be... they have a system, I think, in Scotland, where they confiscate the phone there, and then if they catch somebody on a phone...
Confiscate the phone? They should be treated like a drink driving offence, surely, shouldn't it?
I see cars wandering across my own housing estate, and fellas on phones there, and they're particular there, and they're just on phones there, texting. They think, as I said, they're able to drive the car and text and answer a call and the whole lot, and as eat even in the car, some of them.
That's the campaign I'm talking about. It's called Would It Kill You to Put Your Phone Down? As this character, and he's texting while driving, and then all of a sudden the camera flips to outside of the car and you see him weaving across the line, weaving back and forth while texting, and then flips back into the car with him texting again, and before you know it, there's this massive bang, the smash of glass, the impact of metal on metal, because he strayed over into oncoming traffic while texting. It's very powerful. Will it make a difference?
It is, and they need to be powerful because they need to get the message. But as I said, we should have an authority interacting with Garda Síochána, with even councils, with the state of the roads and certain issues that are there with road safety as well. Like even the Dunkettle there, that's a fantastic idea. It's great to see money being spent on that and in the interest of road safety. This authority should be interacting in all these areas. But the one thing they need to tidy up is their own shop. There's major inconsistency, and as I said, this needs to be addressed. But unfortunately, and it was said to me, because I was bothered about this, what bothered me about this was that if somebody came to me and said, look, I don't care how many lessons I have a job at the moment, but if I don't get this license, the job is gone, and you have this inconsistency in
testing. But no tester's going to listen to that sorry story.
They're not going to listen to it, but like what you want at the end of the day, and this is, I had a meeting with the RSA in the end with this because I couldn't put up with it. And I said, look, I said something needs to be done here, but unfortunately it wasn't done. All they done was move the person.
Okay.
For 5 years we had to put up with this person, and two people in the whole week passed, and the best of drivers going in, and then they wonder
why. That's one isolated incident involving one tester.
Unfortunately, there was another tester there, and I told somebody, now this person is on today. I want you to drive like the hammers of hell, and I want you to forget about all the stuff I told you about hazards, the whole lot. Drive like the hammers of hell, and then they come back. And I know, I said, the question you're going to ask, I said, what I told you today was to pass the test, but all the stuff I told you about hazard perception, about use of speed, the whole lot, I want you to take this on board, because I've taught you there, this is the proper way to drive, but unfortunately today, this is the way you had to drive to pass your test, and that is
like
wrong.
The hammers of hell.
This fella didn't care about, once you put the boat down and drove along and forget about all the hazards, you passed your test. That's the inconsistency in the testing. The major inconsistency. Now, to be honest with you, the RSA and the person I'd done all my exams with was a top-class tester.
People are to blame. People, drivers are the blame. Whether you're the person told to do.
And that basically it's down to the level of instruction. Like I might have come across a bit hard.
I don't see it, man. I understand that you have to be trained and you have to be trained properly, and then the instructors have to do their job very well, and then the testers have to do their job very well. But when you're in the car, you're the one that's responsible. It's very simple.
That responsibility is the way you're being taught. It's like when you're taught in school, you're taught in a certain way. And if the teaching is not at that level, unfortunately, the message doesn't come across. And like I might have come across serious, I might have come across a bit uptight, but the way I done my job every day is if my son or daughter was going to an instructor, this is the way I want things done, and that's the way I carried my
I know that, but you talk about sons or daughters. Anybody listening to me now who is a son or a daughter who is a proficient driver, and they obey all of the rules of the road, they do everything they're supposed to do, and you send them out into the world and they've their own motor car, we worry as parents that they're going to come up against some idiot coming the other way, texting with their head down, up and down, bobbing like a chicken across the road and smacking straight in to our son or our daughter. And then we're getting a visit from a Garda Síochána. It's people are the problem. So So unless we put in a system in cars that disable phones, unless we put a system in cars that make you breathe into some kind of an alkalizer behind, particularly if you've been already done for DD or something like that, unless we turn into a complete nanny state and we get to that stage, nothing's going to change.
Well, unfortunately, like, there's issues there with road policing. There's not enough of it.
You wouldn't need it, but you wouldn't. But Pat, you wouldn't need it if people weren't making the mistakes that they're making and driving the way they are. You wouldn't need any police. You wouldn't need the advertising campaigns. You wouldn't need the RSA.
Yeah, well, you see, we do need all these things, but we need, like anything in the public sector, you see it throughout, it's just not functioning in the way it does. And unfortunately, the RSA were made privatised, and they were basically saying, look, ye have that dealing with it now, do what you like with it. And unfortunately, there's not a hands-on. And we have Minister for Transport and everything, but unfortunately, the interaction is not there. And like, straight up there, okay. The course we done with the advanced driving, this brushed up on what we found is inconsistency with different parts of the country. Before I ever went out on the road with him, I'd ask him, is there any problems or anything you need to address, anything you're coming across on a day-to-day that you want me to cover, okay, before we go out on the road, in the interest of safety. And basically, there was a lot of stuff coming up. There was one area there, and I used to dread it when they come from it, no thing of roundabouts. Basically, there wasn't a roundabout near the place. And another thing with motorway driving. Now, what was coming up, and the RSA wouldn't buy into this, is if somebody every 5 years would take a lesson and brush up on their driving. You know, because we all are like...
Yeah, I mean, I think people would be okay with that as long as they knew that in the event of them taking that brush up lesson, they wouldn't have their license taken off them pending another full test. You know what I mean? If it was just a...
Oh, no, you don't need to go drive the boot in. But, like, unfortunately, and you have this even with old, you know, older drivers as well, and I've had them come to me there, and they're basically saying, look, all I want to do is get a lesson there, and now I just want to drive around the place. I said, hold on a minute. I said, you've come to me for a lesson today. You're actually going to get a lesson. So I saw the respect they showed to me because they learned a lot in their driving. But unfortunately, what they got all along over the years, and probably failed 3 and 4 tests, they got this fella going around, or this person going around, and having an old chat with him and making him feel comfortable and do nothing with him. And, like, unfortunately, these things are happening within the system. But we need to look at this overall. Okay. It saddens me that people are dying on our roads.
Okay. So you're quite critical of the level of driving testers. Thanks for the call. Let me see what the public think. That Pat, I hope it didn't come across as abrupt. If I did, I apologise for it.
No, you didn't, and I hope I got across the message. Thank you. Don't want to be insulting anybody, but we do need to address this because it is bothering me as much as it's bothering you.
Well, it's bothering me very much because I see it really as being the motorist's fault, and I'm open to correction on that. Text 0868 104 106. Kira, good morning.
How are you?
Your thoughts?
Well, I personally think it's the way people are driving, and I think they take their frustration out on the road. Like, I see it, like, I drive daily and I see it every single day. Like, you know, like, there'll be people tailgating me, they'll be undertaking me, overtaking me, and especially in these type of road conditions. Like, say I'd go to Douglas and I'd go out the Link Road, and, like, the way the people drive out there is, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, they're like in a race car track. Mm. You know what I mean? There's no need for it. And I think if everybody just planned ahead, looked ahead, and just kept the distance.
So do you find others intimidating then?
Yes, especially intimidating. Like, I live around the Tesser. I live in the south side, around the Tesser area. And, like, I come across learner drivers every single day, and I'd see the way people would treat the learner drivers. It's ridiculous, and it breaks my heart because, like, I was a learner a couple of years ago myself, and I'm traumatised for the way that I used to be treated on the roads, in the kind of sense where, like, you know, it's the people that would kind of come up your hole, say, if you honk your car, then they're honking their horns or they're overtaking you just because you're going to speed limit. Like, people say would go 60 on a 50, and fair enough, if they want to do that, that's fine. But at the end of the day, like, you know, up ahead there's a crosswalk where the kids will go to a park or something, and the kids will walk across the road, they can get knocked down 2 seconds, like, and it's scary. Like, I just, like, if everybody just literally planned ahead and looked ahead and seen what's ahead, everything would be fine. Like, you know, this wouldn't happen. in the kind, and it breaks my heart looking at the way the road, the way so many people are dying, and it's so scary.
Well, there was a 4-car pileup this morning on the South Ring, and I was coming in very early this morning, and driving conditions were not favourable. There was a lot of surface water. People were still doing 100.
Exactly, people are rushing to work, rushing to drop their kids to school in this kind of weather. If the kids are late, the kids are late. Obviously, the weather condition, people are going to understand it. If you're late for work, people will understand the weather condition. But, like, you know, if everybody's just going to drive like maniacs, like, you know, there's going to be more deaths on our roads. And it's sad because there's a driver that's obeying the rules. And then there's other drivers that are just absolutely mental on the road.
Okay. You also said, the list goes on, I drive daily, the amount of people tailgating, flashing, beeping, because they want you to just get out of their bloody way, is it?
Yeah, like I was going by the Opera House, was it a couple of days ago, and there was a car behind me, and the car was flashing me, and, you know, he was kind of like trying to overtake me by the Opera House. In that kind of sense. And then say I was turning left to go down to North Main Street. And
you weren't slow off the mark when the lights turned green or anything. This was in moving traffic, you and overtaking.
Moving traffic. There was no car in front of me. I was just doing speed limit. I had my daughter in the back of the car, and she's seen the lights herself, like, you know, and it is very scary. And the way people carry on the roads, it's ridiculous.
Okay.
I do reckon that if everybody just literally looked what's ahead and just, you know, there's no need for all the rushing and the racing, and I think a lot of frustration, and it's a lot of, like, you know, the way people just treat, when they get into the car, say they're in a bad mood, and they just take it out on the drivers.
Well, clearly the guy I came across this morning, Big Arctic, ploughing down behind me, he was in a bad mood, start the week, probably didn't like Monday mornings, but, you know, an hour and a half later we hear of a 4-car pile-up on the Ring Road. I don't know whether that was driver error or whether that was road conditions. It could have been driving too close. Who knows? If there are 4 cars involved in it, they could well have been just one of them too close.
Yeah, if you're going out to Mahon, and, you know, like when you're driving out that road, like, you, do you ever notice that, like, the fast, like, they'd call it the fast lane, but it's not the fast lane, like, you know, and you see the kind of turn off before Mahon, and then people would always slow down on that lane, and that's the kind of lane that I find the most dangerous, because, like, say people would go 100 down to, like, 80 or 60, but then the cars then would kind of just swerve into the fast lane, as they'd call it, and then everybody's going into that lane. And I think that's the big issue, is just, like, you know, we're all going, like, you're only saving a couple of seconds off,
if anything at all. You end up usually pulling up beside them about 100 or 200 metres later on. Okay, thanks, Ciara, much obliged. Back after the break. Text 0868 104 106.
Call Neil now, 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
For those that you love cake, Luso have our Monday munchies sorted today. Some more shout outs, please, for everybody, the gang at Blarney Healthcare, to the team at Unified Packaging and Carrick Tool, for all the healthcare assistance at Amberley Nursing Home in Fermoy, to the Cork City National Ambulance Service. Monday munchies, please, to Rachel in Carrigaline working from home, to Premier Auto Parts and Tyres on the Paladuff Road. Monday munchies for the lads at KN Surset. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I see them out working in the vans and laying pipes and fibre and all sorts of things. They're working in the lashing rain today, and would love to brighten up their day. Barry Joyce Cole would love cake. It'd be lovely for the tea break. We're drenched. Delivering coal. Cove Step YMCA back after the Easter holidays. They love cake. Agnes and Brian working at Smurfit Kappa in Toker. And just another few for everybody at My Cork GP in Douglas. We'd love to win the prize on this wet Monday morning for all the girls, nurses and doctors. Fabulous treat for the wonderful nurses, doctors and caregivers in Wiser House in St. Luke's Nursing Home. They're looking after my mum, Phil, with such care and compassion in the 2 weeks before she passed away recently on Mother's Day. To John and Ursula and everybody at Rycal.ie in Kanturk. Shout out to Inge Tech Engineering Supplies in Mallow, working very hard. They'd love some cake. Landscaping crew and nursery staff at Currabeg Nursery in Ovens. And just two more for now. Maternity to Baby, online maternity shop in Rathcormac. And everybody at Rockwell Engineering in the workshop in Cloheen, especially my partner Owen. So keep those texts coming. Text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. Luso are those that provide the most beautiful cakes and biscuits and chocolates and all sorts of treats, and it'll be delivered by Red Patrol at this lunchtime. We'll pick a winner in just an hour's time, there thereabouts. Now, last week, just on the topic of motoring, it doesn't necessarily have to be motor cars, nor trucks, nor Arctics, nor tractors. We share the video of a motorcyclist who's speeding through traffic in the middle of the morning rush hour on the N25. That is coming in the morning, coming east from the west. That'll be up from, you know, the Middleton Cove Carrigtwohill route. And then in the evening, going the other way. It's an absolute miracle that an accident hasn't occurred with regards to this motorcyclist, this person up on the bike, and the speed that he is travelling at, in and out, weaving through. He's past you before you realise it. Such is the speed. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever actually clocked the speed with regards to what he's travelling at, but if you're doing 100 or 110 and he's going past you like a bullet from a gun, he's doing significantly more than the speed limit. Now, that kind of weaving with regards to motorcyclists, I think it's called, is it called filtering? It's that kind of weaving where they are in between the two lanes and they're literally driving at huge speed between two lanes, in and out and in and out and around cars. Like, it's so dangerous. Big response to that, because many other people see the same character. So I'll come back to those texts in the not too distant future, but I'm just conscious of cause as well. James, good morning.
Good morning.
And then, of course, on top of everything else, you would think that the speed vans would make a difference, because we have many of them, right?
It would seem so. I just looked at something there. The speed vans are on a $3 million a year contract, I think, for 5 years. They're making, they're a private company, so they don't show the profit, but they're owned by two different businesses. Xavier McAuliffe, is it, and a French company owned them. They're going to increase in that by 200 vans, is it?
Another two. Yeah, well, if they save lives and they got the contract, good luck to them.
Well, will you tell me how they save lives if they're sitting in a town like Bandon on one of the roads, outer roads, just sitting under the lights at 12 o'clock at night, or they're on the road down to the viaduct at 3 o'clock in the morning?
They catch somebody speeding, perhaps.
Yeah, well, where is anybody getting killed? Minor roads. Minor roads that have got narrower, with no lines, no signs, no maintenance. Major roads, secondary roads that have got narrowed by footpaths and various other changes to the terrain. That's where those are the things you need to look after.
As opposed to putting a speed van on a motorway, say for instance, or a national road, are you suggesting it's just a money-making exercise then?
Oh, totally. I travelled from Dunmore in Galway to Limerick about 2 months ago, and I encountered three speed vans on that length of road, motorway. Three speed vans on that road. Yeah. Now, where have all the accidents been recently? How many have been on a motorway?
Here's the thing. If you catch them speeding on a motorway, right? Isn't there a very good chance that those same drivers are speeding on the country roads you're talking about? So a good place to catch them would be on a motorway, because they're doing it anyway on secondary roads.
Well, yeah, you've got a point. But the most damage is done. The most damage is done in by roads late at night. I think all new drivers for a start should have monitors on their car or restrictors. First 2 years, while you're an intake, you should have a restrictor on your car, restricting your speed, or a monitor for the insurance.
I'm not a motor assessor nor a professional driver in any stretch of the imagination, but if you put a restrictor on someone's car, don't you put them at risk in the case of an emergency where they have to make a quick change or accelerate for whatever reason quickly?
Well, the restrictor only restricts them to the speed limit. So, they're not supposed to be doing any other speed. You don't have blue lights on cars. You're not allowed to break the speed limit in an emergency unless you have blue lights, I believe.
So the restrictor would kick in when you were in an 80, when you were in 100, when you were in a 50, is it? It would automatically restrict you?
Yeah. It would keep you within the speed limit. Now, I saw my two lads got insurance with a company called Boximo, and they fit a unit to the car that monitors your driving. And they give you reduced insurance for that, and they give you a report every week or every month on your driving.
So what happens if you got a bad report of a given week?
They can increase or decrease your premium for the next time. If you get consistent bad reports, they'll drop you.
Surely that should be mandatory then.
Well, exactly. It makes sense. It's not hard to do. Mm. Like, for at least for the while they're in territory, for the 2 years probation, at least for that length of time. Modifications to cars, another problem. No restriction on that, or no checking up on it. There's so, I see cars going around there, they're twice the power that they should be.
It might be very hard to tell the power of a car unless you're in a squad car in the traffic corps and you literally see them. Maybe you can hear the difference, but they do pick up on other modifications. I mean, things like, you know, cars that have
wide wheels.
Yeah, wider wheels, wheels that don't fit, number plates that are wrong color, you know, tinted windows. They do tend to notice those. They'll pull them.
Well, yeah, but when are they getting pulled? Like, you drive quite a bit and you've driven in other countries, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In other countries, you see constant police presence on the roads, on the motorways.
But we don't have them.
Intermingling with the traffic. We have none of the roads.
We don't, because we don't have enough, Gardaí.
Well, like, I mean, but
we wouldn't need Gardaí. Well, you start with people's driving habits themselves. They know when they're doing so. We all know when we're doing something wrong. You know when you're speeding. You know when you pick up the phone. You know when you're racing or hassling other drivers. You know when you.
Yeah, I know.
You know when you speed onto a roundabout, not giving a damn of traffic that are already on there. You know these things.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that. I know that. But how are you going to change that mindset? Control is probably or fear is the only way you're going to change that.
Okay.
I mean, if there's a presence of guards out there, just one other point. If you have a problem with somebody on the road and you want to report it and you're travelling outside NACE, you've got to ring a central number who then rings NACE to go and deal with it.
If you report someone, okay.
If you have a problem with someone and you want to make a report, if you ring NACE guard the station, they'll give you a central number to ring so that they can ring NACE back to go and deal with it.
Do they send a squad out then to the nearest?
Oh, no, that's totally at their discretion. Okay. Again, if they have one.
Okay.
It won't happen.
Okay, thanks, James. Back after 11. Text 0868-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Monday Munchies with Luso of Ballincollig, husband and wife team, Carol Barry and Ian Kerrigan, creating custom artisan treats, handmade. Over 50 years experience between the two of them, and they've baked some beautiful cakes this morning that you can win for the workplace. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106, and we'll do another bunch of shout outs in about 20 minutes time. Text 0868 104 106. We got calls on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I sent you last week of a photograph that we shared on social media from the South Australia Police Force. It was an example of guerrilla marketing, or guerrilla advertising, if you like, one of the big advertising hoarding on the back of a truck outside Anglesey Street Courthouse, right across from Anglesey Street Garda headquarters. And of course, it's going to catch the eye of many, many working Gardaí down around Anglesey Street on the morning that it was there. It says, down here, it's a pretty great career, as in, come and join the South Australian Police Force. And there was a QR code up on the ad, so if a Garda was interested, they would just point their camera at the QR code and get all the details, and also watch a video of what it's like working for the South Australia Police Force. This, of course, is at a time when we are way down on Gardaí. We're well behind the amount of Gardaí we even had pre-COVID. And of course, we have a crisis within the ranks with regards to Gardaí leaving. Imagine that some are already heading to Australia, like many other people have. You can see an awful lot of young people heading Australia way these days. But it was a question that I put to the Australian ambassador to Ireland, Gary Gray, and he joins me by phone as to why they're engaging in this kind of advertising. So, Ambassador, good morning.
G'day, Neil, and thank you for the opportunity to have a yarn with the people of Cork. Terrific.
Good stuff. Okay, well, let's yarn a little bit about as to why the Australian Police Force are doing this. Some would say it's poaching or much needed Gardaí at a time when our own Garda Force numbers are so low.
And they'd be right, but it's also giving people who are interested in international policing experience an opportunity to do that, to build careers, to broaden their career portfolio, and to do their jobs in a different environment. So we think it's good for people.
Yeah, yeah. Where else would you have these advertising hoardings? Is this something that you're actively engaged right across Europe, or is it something exclusive to Ireland's Gardaí?
It's right across Europe. It's also in Canada, and it's in the United Kingdom. So there are active programs to recruit that are operating in many jurisdictions.
Okay.
You know, Neil, Garda Síochána, which are a great police force, they are highly regarded around the world, bring a level of skill and community policing that we believe is really powerful and really interesting in our different law enforcement environment. So we like it.
Have you run into difficulty trying to hire your own?
Yeah, yeah. And the reason why we have that difficulty is our economy, like the Irish economy, is at full employment. And our migration situation, like the Irish, is that we're rapidly bringing in many people. We'll bring in over 220,000 people from different countries into Australia this year alone. So our immigration numbers are much higher than the Irish immigration numbers because our country's much bigger.
Mm.
But also some of the policing tasks, it kind of makes me laugh, Neil, because you hear people saying, you know, I'm going for the sun on the beach. Well, mate, you might well end up at Marlabor in the middle of South Australia, in the middle of the continent. That puts you roughly 2,000 kilometres from the beach. But it will be warm.
Yeah. But you also might be working in mining where you're pulling thousands of dollars a week, building up a huge cache of cash in that period of time, and not having a chance to even spend it for weeks on end. That work is hard. Now I'm off topic now talking about that. Many Irish go there to do mining work, make lots and lots of money, and perhaps choose to come home. But I'm just kind of trying to hone in on this specific aspect, though, that some would suggest here in Ireland that some professions should be off limits to you guys, and that would be our Gardaí, our nurses and our doctors. But you are very much chasing them down with advertising campaigns to the detriment of law and order in Ireland and to the detriment of our medical profession.
And so Ireland brings in medical workers from Europe and from other parts of the world.
But we wouldn't perhaps need to, and there's nothing wrong with that, but maybe that's a necessity because our own are being poached or encouraged with sweeteners and what have you to go abroad.
That's right. And that's the personal choice of those people. They get to make their personal choices where they live, where they build their lives and their careers, and they get to make their personal choice when they come home. Because, Neil, they do come home. Ireland's a great place to come back to, and when you're at the family formation stage, there's nothing like the softness and gentleness of an Irish family to fall back into.
Oh, and that's lovely and touchy-feely, Ambassador. I get that, but you haven't picked up the phone to back home and said, guys, back off with the advertising outside courthouses. Back off with the advertising outside the HQs of Garda stations. They've got a crisis in policing in Ireland. It's not fair, no?
No, I wouldn't do that. I'd say run your advertising, give people the choice, and let's make sure that people who want to be in police enforcement, wherever they're from, get to do that career as well as they can and get to become great law enforcement officers with international experience. I think that's good for individuals, for their careers, and good for our countries.
But you're coming across as if you believe that they will go and that they'll be lured away under the promise of what? Better pay, conditions, weather, lifestyle, but that they'll come back. How do you know they'll come back? And in the meantime,
it's not necessarily better pay and better conditions because, you know, largely it's the opportunity. And they come back, mate, look at your Irish rugby team. You've got a bunch of Australians playing in it. Australian people with Irish heritage love to come back to this country because it's a great country. They don't go away and not come back. This isn't 1890. This is a new era with new Irish migrants who go and come back and grow in the process.
Oh, but that's sport. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be doing my job if I wasn't pushing back against you saying advertising outside courthouses and advertising outside Garda stations is, okay, it's a lure. I get that, to encourage them to go away.
But you used to just send us your criminals. the advertising outside a courthouse would have been just for the criminals. Now we're recruiting the police officers too. It's a much more balanced approach now.
Yeah. No, well, it might well be for the South Australia police, certainly, but it's to the detriment of Irish law and order and Irish policing. And that recruitment drive is luring serving Gardaí away from the front line here.
And AGS is a very highly regarded police enforcement organisation with a very highly regarded policing culture. And so it attracts people. As I said today, there are people from 23 nations serving in AGS. That's a good thing because it gives you cultural difference and diversity. It gives you the capacity to understand our changing Irish community better than otherwise would be the case. We live in an international environment in all things, Neil, and policing is no different.
Absolutely, and people can come and go as they please. But again, I'm talking about a crisis here. We have under 14,000 serving Gardaí. It's one of the lowest numbers in many years. There's targets to continue to commit to grow those numbers, and Australia is not helping in that regard. Would one of the reasons be, to be fair, is that rank-and-file recruits can expect a starting salary in Australia the equivalent of about €60,000? Before allowances and overtime? Is that the attraction, do you think?
I think it's attractive, but I don't think it's the key thing. I think the key thing is a different experience in a different environment. And that's not to say it's a better experience in a better environment. Community policing in Ireland is a very different form of policing. And so to get the different experience of being a different kind of police officer in Australia, in Kalgoorlie, which is Western Australia, not South Australia, or in Mount Isa, which is in Queensland, is a different thing. And, you know, young Irish have always travelled. They've always had that experience. But, Neil, in my experience, they come home. They do come home.
Well, a lot of the people that you're after, albeit doctors or nurses or people in healthcare or people in on Garda Síochána, are very highly trained. Much of that is paid by the state. They're highly trained. Maybe that's the attraction. So the state is paying them, training them to give them to Australia. Where's the fairness in that?
The fairness is because it's individual choices. So we can't say to our doctors and our psychologists who come to Ireland, you've been trained in Australia, don't come to Ireland. People get to make their choices about where they spend their lives and where they grow and form their families. And in a global environment, we should be celebrating that so we don't become isolated islands of indifference. We're a big island. Ireland's a small island, but we're both islands.
One's a continent.
Yeah, a bit bigger.
Yeah, a little bit bigger. Do you understand that some people might get their nose out of joint when they hear of big recruitment drives in big hotels, over a 3 or 4 day period for doctors, for nurses, for healthcare, for Gardaí, that it annoys them because we need them here. You don't accept that? You think it's about freedom of choice?
I do fully understand that, but I do think it's about freedom of choice.
Okay, thank you for that. Just finally, obviously, an awful lot of young people, particularly since COVID, have left Ireland to go to Australia. Are they going for the adventure, do you think? Are they going is it a career path? Is a little bit of both? Are they right to be going? What should they be aware of before they decide to go?
So the first thing is make sure you have a visa. The second one is make sure that you have insurance. And the third one is best to travel with friends, especially if you're female, best to travel with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Stay safe, be thoughtful, stay in touch.
And is there a good chance that they land a job and somewhere to live that's affordable, I wonder?
Yes. Yes, but it is hard. Every country in the world that has a growing economy, and in Ireland we're lucky to have a growing economy, in Australia we're lucky to have a growing economy, all of the places where there are robust growing economies have accommodation issues. So I'm not about to suggest to you that come to Australia, get more pay, it's sunnier, and you'll have a house. It can be tough.
Mm.
if you go out as a police officer or as a nurse, accommodation comes as part of that package. So that's different. But if you're going out as a young working holiday maker, accommodation can be tough. So be insured, have a visa, travel with friends.
Okay, just finally, that point you said, if a member of an Garda Síochána goes, Australia will provide them with somewhere to live?
When they go in those recruitments that our state of South Australia is running, that our West Australian government runs, that our state government's run in general, because they're the employers of police officers, yeah, it comes with accommodation.
What would that be? A bed in a dorm, or your own home, or your own apartment? Or...
It would depend where you are. If, for instance, it is literally to that place I mentioned, Marlborough, it would be a house, it would be a several-bedroom house, and it would be close to where the police station is. And then you would also have a very large patrol area, vehicles connected through modern communications technology into the comms headquarters in Adelaide, which is roughly 1,500 kilometres away.
You can't specify as to whether you land a job in the boondocks or you land a job in Adelaide or Sydney or Perth or places like that, no?
I don't know how each individual state does it. In some states you can, but in general, no, you can't.
Okay. Much obliged to you for taking the call this morning. Thank you so much. That's the Australian Ambassador to Ireland, Gary Gray. A lot of texts on this. In fact, the Garda Síochána in the Cork, Kerry and Limerick southern region saw the advert. Down here, it's a pretty great career. And they were not impressed because they posted online with a caption of that advert outside, I guess, a Garda station, and the caption has five members of an Garda Síochána standing next to the big boarding advert, and the caption says, "But up here, it's a job worth doing," up here being Ireland. The caption that went with it then was extended to say, "Gardaí in Limerick's Henry Street weren't overly impressed with the parking situation outside the station today. Remember, joining an Garda Síochána is a challenging, but it's a job worth doing." I'm wondering if they ticketed the advert for illegal parking. Anyway, keep your text coming on that text, 0868 104 106. I'll pick up on comments after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Difference being, rank and file recruits can expect a starting salary in Australia of about €60,000 before allowances and overtime. The ambassador went on there to say that accommodation is also provided. The starting salary for a qualified Garda here is not 60 grand, it's 34,572. If it were 45 grand, if it were 50 grand, if it was 55 grand, we'd probably have an awful lot more people saying, yeah, that is a career choice for me because I can get a home, I can rear a family if I chose to do so, and I can live in Ireland. But for 34,572, considering what the cops have to put up with, would you be bothered? It would take 8 years for a Garda to get from 34 grand to 53 grand, and there's 7,000 still behind the starting rate of pay for a rank and file recruit in Australia. They've had other drives by the Australian police force that were successful in luring Gardaí with promises to go down there. Several dozen joined the Western Australian police force in the past. That's an article that I read online at the weekend. I'm Australian, and in Australia, the public refers to the cops as pigs, and the public in Australia hates them. Hmm. The Aussie police swear an oath to serve the English monarchy instead of serving a constitution to protect the dramatic democratic rights of the people, as the Gardaí do here. Serve the constitution. In Australia, they serve the king. I have found the Irish Gardaí to be so kind and helpful. They are far too good for Australia, but I do wish the best of luck to anyone who wishes to take on the adventure. I honestly think the Irish Guards are far too good for Australia. One example. One time, my husband and I called the Gardaí near midnight when we found a drunk old man falling on a busy road. He was trying to walk home from the pub in Cork City and was in danger of obvious harm to himself if we left him there. So I rang the Gardaí and they soon arrived and took the elderly guy safely home because he lived nearby. I said to my husband, "Thank God we're in Ireland. That old man would have been surely locked up for the night if he was in Australia." And the police drove by and they'd just look at him. The Gardaí and the Irish Gardaí do a wonderful job. I'd actually hate to see any of them leave for Australia. Thank you for that. And that's from an Australian here in Ireland. Michael says, just like they ran the nurses out of Ireland, and as the nurses were leaving through the departure gates, their foreign replacements were already coming through the arrivals. They're doing the same with young disillusioned Gardaí. It's all by design, with collusion from the Australian Commonwealth Government to facilitate the ethnic cleansing of the Irish. Ain't that just a little bit of a stretch? Text 0868 104 106. The pay is okay in Ireland as a guard. Sort the pension and the gratuity to what it was, and most will stay. I won't even go into management strategies, says Murph, serving guard, I suppose. Not quite sure. Mick says, best of luck to anyone that takes that offer. Why stay here and be treated like dirt by a government that only care about paying themselves huge wages and multiple pensions? Helen says, it is not fair that the Australians poach our guards, but that's how life is. Think about it first. No money would pay you for leaving your life behind, would it? Think of all you're missing. I can see why going for a year might work, but that is not on offer here. Well, the ambassador says, not maybe not a year, but he says in most of the cases, people that do go come back again. Eddie says, best of luck, lads. I wouldn't blame you if you surrender to the temptation. Veronica says, will they provide them with a place to stay, given how hard it is to get housing there at the moment? The answer to that is yes. Job comes with accommodation. Tig says, it's a huge opportunity for any of the force that qualifies. It's not just the opportunity to work with the Australian police, but after the police career, there are many high-paying jobs available in Australia for cops in many sectors. On that, the lifestyle might just be better as well. Unfortunately, Ireland loses its highest trained personnel if they choose to go. And of course, who gains? Australia. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Let me get back to the phone lines. Kieran, good morning.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you for calling in. A major incident in Kanturk. What can you tell us?
The main street, Petrol Street in Kanturk, is all closed off and sealed off. I don't know what's after happening there. Fire brigade are on scene and ESP are on scene. It's on the main street, and from the square all the way up to where Keating's vehicle was, is all sealed off. That's all I do know. So the main street is sealed off in Kinturk at the moment.
And did you say that? I know you said that there's guard presence. Is there the presence of fire brigades, do you think?
Yes, and there's presence of ESP as well.
Okay, so but you can't see any smoke or naked flame?
There's no smoke. I'd say I don't know what's happening, but there's a big presence there at the minute, whatever's happening in the main street.
Thank you so much for calling it in, Kieran. I do appreciate it. Thank you. Whatever's going on, major incident, Kanturk, the main street's closed off. Gardaí, Fire Brigade and ESB there at the moment. That's why we need our emergency services, guys. Bernard says, haven't we plenty of young people drafted, brought, immigrated already and left? What's the problem? Everyone else worthwhile and already educated is gone far away. US as well as Australia. Kay says, go for it. Australia is a wonderful place to live. Sun and sea and plenty of money. Not if you're a garda that's put clunked down right in the middle of Australia. Like, very, very rural. Be many thousand miles from a beach. But anyway, David says, to be fair, they'll have a tough time recruiting Gardaí from here because at times it doesn't seem like there's any guards in Ireland at all. Paul, finally for now, I wonder when those in charge are going to learn. We lose nurses to other countries because they aren't paid enough. Well, now it's the turn of the Gardaí. Good luck to any single guard that decides to go, I say. If the Irish government won't pay them, it's high time that they find someone who will. I also wonder, was the offer made because even the Australian government know that we don't pay very well? Well, that was one of the questions I put to the ambassador. They said that this type of advertising, this type of procurement, if you like, is going on in countries right across Europe. But I had thought for a moment that it might have been just targeting Irish Gardaí. Back to the phone lines and then more texts in a few minutes' time. Text 0868 104 106. John, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
Well, now, what did you make of the ambassador? I hope you had a chance to hear that.
No, I missed that.
Okay.
But look,
okay. He says freedom. It's freedom of choice. Many of those that go come back home again. It's not a full-time decision, et cetera, et cetera.
That's fair enough. You know, I mean, like, you can't stop people from wanting to move around.
It's the manner. Manner in which they're trying to procure them is what people find distasteful.
Like, I mean, what I find amazing is I personally know of a couple of lads here in Cork upright citizens. They've never been in trouble. They've applied, and they got no response.
What? I mean, they didn't even get a response to an official application?
Nothing.
Now, I mean, don't expect a response within a working week. Like, how long are we talking about here?
Oh, no, I know. We're talking in excess of 6 months.
Oh, my God. Was there even an acknowledgement of the application?
Nothing.
Oh, my God. That's shocking.
Not to Australia, to the Irish police.
I know that. You're talking about wanting to... This is somebody already working in a full-time job in a different career who wants to become a guard, applied 6 months ago, didn't even get even an acknowledgement of the application.
Nothing. He may as well have been applying for an application form for a rocket scientist.
And did he follow up and query or make... any investigation into the matter? Ask somebody, email again, pick up...
No, but he's totally disillusioned. Totally disillusioned with the fact that he couldn't get a response, especially when they're apparently crying out for people. I mean, are we going down the same road with the nepotism for members of the Gardaí?
How do you mean?
My dad was a Gardaí.
No. We're at crisis point where there has been a commitment to increase the force, firstly in the not too distant future, to 15,000 and then to 18,000 to fill Temple Moor with recruits. Are we talking about a fit, healthy young man now, no criminal record and all that kind of thing?
He's playing rugby constantly, no criminal, nothing.
I can't believe that 6 months has passed and there hasn't even been an acknowledgement.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, are they too busy going down the road of diversity to be looking at the home produced boys?
There is very much a push on for diversity in different career paths. I know, for instance, that diversity can be seen very much now within the arts, theatre, media, television, where they must have diversity from the point of view of people's ethnic origins. You know, that's not necessarily just the color of their skin, but that's becoming more and more apparent in the television you work for, what you watch, for instance. Have you noticed that?
Well, let me put it like this. Like, I've been around long enough, and when I can remember that guys that I went to school with, that's... Irish wasn't up to scratch and they couldn't join the Gardaí. English can be a second language now to you and you can still get in though.
Yeah, wouldn't necessarily see that as a problem if you can speak English though, even if your first tongue is French or Spanish or Chinese. Why would that? No, my point is, like, for far too long, and I know I'm honing in about television and movies and films and stuff like that. I saw it recently in Kin, the Irish television crime drama series. Thank God we had in that show a lot of people who aren't white. Because the world isn't white. It's black and white. It's all sorts of different colours. That's good.
Well, I have no problem about the different of people joining the Gardaí, but you would imagine that a homegrown young fella that you could check out in 5 minutes would be in with a shout anyway.
I have no idea why that would happen. Without naming any names, would you be okay if we were to just query that as to why somebody would apply already clearly in a job where they have a good career and work ethic, healthy, fit, play sports, no criminality, applied for the guard 6 months ago and got no acknowledgement?
Yeah, I'll say it to him later in the day and I'll pass on the message and he'll come back on to you if he chooses to engage with you.
Because we're wasting our time if this is happening the length and breadth of Ireland, where people want to be recruited and they just are being ignored.
No, well, I think they're like putting a sign up outside the police station. Like, I mean, when I saw the sign that they were looking for a guard, I thought it was for crime. You know?
How do you mean?
I thought they were maybe double after committing some crime and they were one though.
No. You've seen the recruitment advert, have you?
Yeah. I mean,
But there isn't much point in putting up posters if you're not going to act on the people. That's local people who's employed.
No, the posters are for the Australian police force, not for our own. I mean, we'd be far better off having mobile trucks going around from the Irish Department of Justice trying to recruit people into the Irish Gardaí and paying them properly accordingly.
Yeah, but should the Irish Gardaí should put up alongside and say that we're also looking for Gardaí here, you know?
That's the point I'm making. Come back to me.
Like, I mean, the grass is always greener elsewhere, but, you know, our grass turns to hay.
Okay, come back to me. Come back to me if you'd like us to maybe push that a little bit and see.
I'll touch base with him and we'll see. Will he come back?
All right, John. Thanks for now. My worry is that this could be not just an isolated case. That there could be other people the length and breadth of the country have also applied and have absolutely heard nothing. I don't think it has anything to do with diversity. That they're not interested in a particular type of person with a particular colour of skin or a particular language that they might speak as a first language. But anyway, text 0868104106. And Sean Meehan earlier this morning up in Kerr, County Tipperary, in his log cabin, back in court again on June 6th. This country is only for people who don't want to do anything and be given everything themselves for nothing. Why is this man being penalised for looking after himself? Listening to Sean, the poor man, it's not fair what they're doing. The planners are a gang that make up the rules as they go along. What a country. I live in a van and watch all the houses getting given to the new Irish. I'll say it again. I live in a van. Enjoy your house tonight, people. We need a revolution. Listen, if you're interested in talking to me about life in a van, do get back to me. Text 0868104106. I'd love to talk.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
More conversations between now and midday, and then we'll pick it up again tomorrow. But Luso Cork are the providers of our Monday munchies these days. Two fabulous cakes, luxurious carrot and walnut celebration cakes, lightly spiced with vanilla and cinnamon, with fresh mascarpone cream cheese frosting. Sound absolutely delicious. Have a slice and then go back for a second one if you're lucky enough to win it for wherever you work this morning. Our last bunch of shout outs for Monday munchies: AP Vaughan Recycling and Tower, the A&E staff, and the CUH. Would love some cake. Big thank you to them for taking care of my mum over the weekend. I love hearing texts like that when things go well. I hope that she makes a recovery. The lads in Euro Car Parts in Sarsfield Road in Wilton. Frank here at the old waterworks on the Lee Road. We really need cheering up. We are depressed. It's not funny. We keep turning up for work every day and night doing 12-hour shifts. Turning up for work's a good thing. 12-hour shifts, not such a good thing. Big shout-out for Barry Sheehan Painters in Crown Thomas this morning. Love cakes for the painter George on his birthday. Building Stones. Building Stone for all your supplies. At Building Stone, says Connor and Tripsy. Martha, a healthcare assistant, would love the beautiful treat for the Wise House staff at St. Luke's Home. Going above and beyond. Best care for the residents 24 hours a day, 365. It would brighten up the day of the residents too. Cake for everybody, the staff and the residents. O'Sullivan's Pharmacy on the South Douglas Road. Our pharmacist is retiring this week. Lucky her. Their words, not me. Monday munchies for all the staff at Crown Centre and Ovens. They work with children and adults with neurophysical disabilities and their families. My daughter attends the service and they're amazing, says Susan. Crown means family. Monday munchies for Sandy and myself, please. Noreen here in Sandy Paws, working hard in Monkstown. Off to Ben El Medina. No, I think Ben El Medina is the correct one, if I were Spanish, which I'm not. Open to correction on that. But they're off next month. Yummy mummies in the sun, they say. And they'd love the treat. Have a great time. Enjoy it. I hear the weather's not great in Ben El Medina these days. I don't think the forecast is great for it. I'm only making it up. Anyway, we'll pick a winner for Free Food Friday in the next 5 minutes, and then the Red Patrollers will get it delivered. Meanwhile, just another few texts, and then back to different calls. Dead right. Regards to poaching our Gardaí. Ireland is falling apart and full of beggars who have more rights than working people. I don't know whether the working class are the fools after all, huh? They should have to pay back the money to the taxpayer for their training, to be honest. I'm not against them moving, but were they trained on the taxpayer's expense? What about that, though? If people, if you're a young fella, able, fit, Hard-working guy, wants to make a career change, become a Garda Síochána, member of Garda Síochána, applied 6 months ago and hasn't heard a single word since. I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? It's huge amounts then on driving and people's driving habits, but just a few on Sean Meehan in his log cabin above in Care. Sean Meehan has my full support. Where are all the Irish do-gooders now? The ones who looked after all the other people coming into this country. Why aren't they gathering round now for this born and bred Irishman who's worked hard and just wants a home? Sean Meehan is not homeless. He has a home. He put it up around himself because nobody else would. I wish that man and his log cabin all the best. I do believe the laws need updating and modernising with regards to where we live. There needs to be a special circumstances clause. They need to protect against everyone springing up cabins in the back garden and renting them out on Airbnb. I get that, but there should be extenuating circumstances for others. This government's only interested in people from overseas, not the Irish, because there are no votes for this government, from the Irish people anymore. What an absolute disgrace what's happening to Sean. No planning for modular homes for Ukrainians, and they want to throw an Irish man into jail for putting a roof over his head. It's as simple as that. What in the name of God is going on in our country? Shame on the council. Love the show, says Mary Jane, and there are many more like that which I'll come back to. If I can just get another quick one here, because I was talking recently with Thor, right, who has literally gone to every single country in the world. I believe there are 105 different countries. It took him like 5 or 6 years to do it, and he told our story on the air on Friday. And then lo and behold, on the weekend, my Instagram, I got a little note popped up on my Instagram from 180 Degrees Travel, who sent me their contacts and some fabulous photographs of what they're doing. And Sinead joins me by WhatsApp in Bali, I believe. Am I right, Sinead?
Yes, I'm here in Canggu with my partner Hugh.
Okay, was
hello.
It? Hi, Hugh. How goes it, my man? Was it purely coincidental that you got onto me on Instagram, or had you heard Thor's story about visiting every country in the world?
I mean, that's the dream. We actually were checking in from home, so we were listening to Red FM, and that definitely caught our attention. Unfortunately, we're only doing 21 at the moment, but in 6 months, and hopefully maybe we can catch up to him at some stage during our lives.
Oh my God, I wish I had more time. Tell me all about this trip, Sinead. You're a radiographer from Cork. Hugh is a Dubliner. Yeah. We won't hold that against him. sorry, Hugh. Why did you plan and when did you plan to do this?
I suppose we kind of came to the decision 2 years ago. We were actually hoping to save up for a mortgage, and I suppose just due to the housing crisis in Ireland at the moment and all that, it kind of slowed down the process. Then we kind of realised, you know, we'd love to see the rest of the world, see how other people live and the different cultures. You know, we keep hearing that. I think Ireland's a great country, but we do hear a lot of negativity out there these days. So we kind of wanted to see what else is out there. But we've had such an amazing time. But I think overall what we've kind of come to the conclusion is, you know, we don't have it too bad out in Ireland. Yeah, it's been quite amazing.
Actually, Kevin, who is a producer on this show, finished on Friday. He's off now to spend a year travelling around the world. He had his mortgage. They had their eye on a house. The house that they were buying fell through, and they said, ah, let's do it now before we're too old to do it. It's kind of similar to yours. Where have you been so far? This is day 113 or something?
We're actually on day 127 at the moment, so nearly there. So we actually started in Mexico. So we made our way through Central America, then down to South America. We got to see some amazing things like Machu Picchu. We're in Rio for Carnival. Then we went across the world over to New Zealand, and then we had a few...
Was that where you got food poisoning, is it?
Poisoning? No, unfortunately, that was in Panama in Central America. But, I mean, there's always ups and downs with traveling.
What did you eat that you shouldn't have eaten?
Well, I got E. coli from the water. So I was a bit unlucky. I was on a boat trip for 5 days at the time. I was 12 hours into the boat trip, and I came down with the illness. So not the best time to get food poisoning.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean... There's always highs and lows with this. And I mean, that's what made the highs so high after, you know, experiencing something like that. It kind of puts it all into perspective of, you know, even just walking down the street and meeting different people and how that's amazing compared to being in the bathroom for 12 hours.
Wanting the world to end. It's a bit like radiographer, heal thyself. You couldn't, you had to go through it. But you had, okay, so you had Christmas in Mexico just gone, and then down south,
yeah.
you climbed, is it, like, are there restrictions now on Machu Picchu, or can you still go up?
So, yeah, so we actually, Machu Picchu was something we had booked before we left. We were really, really excited to do it. But a day before we were supposed to leave for the Inca Trail, we arrived in Cusco and there were strikes happening. So unfortunately, we couldn't do the Inca Trail. It was closed. You know, we talked to the locals there and they said the only way you could possibly make it to Machu Picchu is if you're willing to walk along the train tracks for 20 kilometers and then up to the mountain. So that's what we decided to do, actually. We still got to see it, and it was amazing.
God, you want to be very fit.
There was only 20. That's exactly it. So there was only 20 people there when we arrived. So it was like a private tour, because there's usually about 4,000, is it, Hugh, there a day, per day. So it was a really unique experience.
Oh my God. It's like as if you had it all to yourself.
Exactly. No needing to crop people out of photos. So,
oh my God! Nice. And did you have to trek back down the rail line again?
We did. So we got a few blisters on the way, but well worth it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you visited, I don't know, how many did you say? 20 already? Is it something like that?
So we have, how many do we have done now, Hugh?
We're on number 15.
Oh, 15. So, okay. And yeah, when I was talking to Coleman, when I was talking to Kevin on Friday, one of those countries he was going to was Colombia. And I said to him, you need to be careful there. Would you concur, lads?
It's funny. We actually, for my parents and Hugh's as well, when they heard we were going to Colombia, they're a bit worried for us. But, you know, we actually went to Medellin, which, obviously 10, 20 years ago was the drug capital of the world, the most dangerous city in the world. But we had an amazing, amazing experience there. They've really turned the city around, and they've really put a lot of work into the city. And it's now actually one of the safest cities in Colombia to visit.
Yeah.
And they really welcome tourism.
Yeah, but you were robbed there, were you?
That was Peru.
In Peru. So it says Colombia, Peru.
A little bit of our own fault.
How?
A little bit of naivety on our part. I mean, obviously that was upsetting, but then we looked around us and unfortunately we were in an area that was pretty poor, and, you know, that really, I suppose, switched our minds pretty quickly to how fortunate we are, and they're only materialistic things, you know.
Was it your backpack or what was taken?
It was actually our electronics bag. So we got a GoPro because we actually did our scuba diving course. So we had all of our footage under the water and everything like that. So, and then just, yeah, wallets and... Anyway, we were
You sound philosophical about it, in the sense that they're worse off than you, and you could understand why they did it.
No, I don't want that to, I suppose, have a negative impact on how we perceived Peru, because the people we met there were so welcoming and so lovely. And, you know, one bad experience, I don't think, defines a whole country. So, I mean, we don't understand the circumstances they're living in. I mean, you know, we'll come back and we'll forget all about that GoPro and wallet, but, you know.
Is you available there? Can I just put a couple of points to him?
No,
Howdy, partner.
Kate's just going off here, so I just thought I'd let her.
She's well able, but
finance man, he's organising all of the budgeting, I suppose, and daily budgets.
So how are the budgets working out, Hugh? Do you allocate X amount per day, and do you use Revolut or go to ATMs or what?
Yeah, so the budget, as Sinead said, it was kind of a 2-year process of us saving up and figuring out and doing a lot of research on how much it would cost in every different country. So, for instance, Australia and New Zealand is way more expensive than Central and South America, so we had to account for that. But we do spend, it's only a couple of minutes really at the end of every day, just totting up and making sure that we're still within what we said we were going to spend. And we've kind of split it out into accommodation, into transport, into activities. And it's good to know that we're currently in the green, which is nice. But it has been a journey. And one of the things that we've done, as you can see from our page, we kind of just put up daily vlogs to show what's going on. But in the background, we're accumulating a huge amount of information. And we really believe that if people want to do something similar, we didn't think we were going to be able to do this. But when we actually sat down and realized how much it might cost and how much we could put aside every month for a couple of years, it is doable.
And is it fair of me to ask you what that figure is?
Yeah.
It is. It is. So the figure is, again, depending on where you go. So we did add in Australia and New Zealand, mainly because there's a huge amount of Irish out there, many of whom are friends and family that we wanted to visit. So that added on a little bit. So the overall figure for the 6 months, and again, depending on where you go, flights can be more expensive, is 17,000. And that can be lowered if you just stayed in Central and South America. So again, one of the things that we've noticed was, as we traveled around, you meet some amazing people with amazing stories also traveling around these countries. And lots of them will spend 6 months just in South America. And obviously doing that and getting rid of all of those major kind of flight costs,
yeah,
you can bring that cost way down.
Yeah.
But when we set out, we kind of listed out the main 20 countries that we wanted to see, and we tried to make it work. So that's basically where we got to. But everyone's journey will be different.
Oh, and I've been following some of your fabulous graphics on your Instagram, and it's buses and planes, and you're doing the bus and the plane icon all the way down through Central America, down through South America. I see you should be in, you in Chile, or have you left South America now?
Yes, we've left South America. So we're in Canggu in Bali. We've made it over to Indonesia now. So we're working our way back the other way. To Ireland. So we'll have done a full lap of the world, but obviously flown over a lot of it, which hopefully someday, as Sinead said, we might be able to come and visit.
And where is next? Are you going to, so will you go, would that be Hawaii then, or down to Australia, or what?
So we went from Chile across to New Zealand, and then we're basically working our way back up through Southeast Asia. So we're currently in Indonesia, we're going to go to the Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia and Singapore, and then we fly home from Singapore, because unfortunately we could only get 6 months off. We would love to continue to do this,
which was amazing. In terms of work, they were very, very accommodating.
Yeah, absolutely. You got jobs to come back to. That's great. Take that box. Where are you staying? I mean, we'll talk again. I'm out of time for now, but hopefully we will get to talk again on the next few stages of your journey. But final call, where do you lie your head at night?
So something that we don't actually have in Ireland much of is hostels. And we have to admit the hostel standard in Central South America and Asia has been amazing. It's a really high standard. You feel extremely safe. And I mean, accommodation, what was it in South America? On average, you're talking for a double ensuite room, €14, €15 a night. I mean, we ate out for dinner yesterday and it was $6.50 for two main courses.
God almighty. That's something.
It's amazing.
And so far, Sinead, before I leave you, I know you've lots more to do. You've got something like 50 plus countries on the bucket list. Where's been the best place so far?
Oh, that's a question we keep getting asked, and it's a really, really tricky one. I mean, each country has an amazing, you know, aspect and culture in itself. But I think, weirdly enough, me, even though it's the place we did get robbed, was Peru was really amazing. Just learning about the Inca culture and seeing Machu Picchu in person, it's just absolutely amazing.
Okay.
I don't know. What about you?
I don't know. I really enjoyed Colombia. And as Sinead said earlier, there was kind of a negative connotation towards Colombia. But again, it's one of the most cultural, vibrant places that I've ever seen in my life. And I hope to be back.
Yeah.
Sounds as if you're living the dream, guys. Your Instagram is superb. I would encourage everybody to check it out. We'll chat again, hopefully, in the next few weeks, see how things are going, all right?
Thank you so much for having us on, Neil. Thank you.
My pleasure. I wish I had more time. Thank you, Sinead. Thank you, Hugh. What a great trip. 180 degrees travel on Instagram. Fabulous, fabulous photographs and a great map that they've worked out where they're circumnavigating all the way through Central and South America. 180 degrees travel on Instagram. Have yourselves a good day. My Monday Munchie winners for today to start the week, courtesy yourselves and Luso, are Lydia Moynihan and all of the staff at Cove Hospital. Monday Munchies, please, on this miserable day for the staff at Cove Hospital. It's on the way. You'll be well fed, some beautiful cakes and gifts from Luso. Don't forget to send us a photograph and enjoy. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.